It's showtime.
Bob Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Here we go, off and running on this 19th day of June, Juneteenth, 2023. This is The Horn, headon.live. This is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's where you go if you'd also like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time, madcap, multimedia extravaganza that is The Horn chat room in the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, all time zones in between and the great globe round, and whatever time it is when you're listening to the podcast. And, hey, if you're listening to the program by the podcast, well, please like it or follow it or subscribe to it or whatever they describe so that you won't miss out on a single upload. And pretty please leave a comment so that their algorithms will know, you know, that like the Who's in Whoville, we're here, we're here, we're here. I was at Pride on Saturday. That must have snuck in. But please do, and you know, share it on social media. Let's do what we can to grow this little community, because with election year coming next year, we're going to want to make sure that people have a safe space to come and engage in conversation and bolster themselves against the rising tide of MAGAism, fascism, DeSantism, what have you. Hi, I'm Robin, and look, I'm sorry about last week, and while we're at it, I'm sorry about the week before. Things. And as to what happened Friday, I wish I could tell you. I can tell you what happened to the other programs, because I was kind of an active participant in why they didn't happen. Friday? Not so much. Friday, I was cruising merrily along, and we were well on our way to maybe knocking down our dear friend Matt's you show me yours and I'll show you mine challenge. And then, poof, no internet, nothing. We've got a couple of Apple devices in here, and they're very... They're very quick to tell you when you do not have Wi-Fi service. So, all of a sudden it said, hey, you're not connected to the internet. Would you like to try yada, yada, yada? And so, you know, like 30 minutes later, I finally, you know, I immediately jumped on the phone to the folks there at Shentel. It was like, I know I paid the bill. Because I did. I knew I paid the bill. And they're like, oh, no, Robin, it's not you. It's us. Don't you love it when they tell you it's not you, it's not you, it's us. And started making internet gobbledygook noises that meant about as much to me as, you know, English does to a polar bear. And the bottom line was there was no damned internet. Just wasn't. So we will keep fingers crossed because, you know, there's a chance of thunderstorms rolling through. And that never bodes well for either the power grid or the interweb tubes. And just, you know, hope. Hope in one hand. It's the hope that kills you. Such a little Ted Lasso fan, I'm sorry. But it's Moran Monday, and we've got, well, in Donald Trump's mansion are many Morans. Let's put it that way. Kind of gray and just drizzly. It's, you know, it's a rainforest Appalachian summer afternoon. Because, well, the last day of spring doth approach. But the good news is there shouldn't be any interruptions of the program this week. The closest thing is tomorrow. And, okay, let me just... My exciting little life. I've never had hair as long as I have now. And Annette has kind of been after me, telling me you gotta have your split ends cut off, because they'll just keep splitting. So with much trepidation, tomorrow afternoon, I have a doctor's appointment tomorrow morning. And then tomorrow afternoon, I'm gonna have to do, somehow or another, I'm going to have to kill a bunch of hours in Beckley. And then tomorrow afternoon, I have an appointment for my very first serious big girl haircut. I hope she doesn't have to cut too much. I'm actually stressing out about it. Sorry. So that's that, but that should be over by 4, and I should be through the door and okay as far as the program is concerned. Assuming, of course, that the interweb tubes stay on. So there. Anyway, I failed to mention something. If you should happen to want to participate in the aforesaid Merry Wacky Zany while the program is live, pop on by. You'll be greeted by the early arrivers. That's Anatole and Irish Dave and Ralphs and Squeaky, and capably moderated by Horn Chief Agronomist and Chief Mathematician and Bud Trimmer Emeritus, Roger, in Oregon. Roger wishing everyone happy Juneteenth. Happy Juneteenth indeed. We've got a story to kind of get that whole thing started here in a second. Marking the day in 1866? Seven? In which a Union general, having sailed into Galveston Bay in Texas, spread the word far and wide that enslavement was no longer legal, except in cases of punishment for convicted crimes. Involuntary servitude and slavery were illegal in the United States. It is a momentous holiday. It's a federal holiday. Even in West Virginia, make West Virginia great big old Governor Jim Justice even signed off on the holiday. So happy Juneteenth. And curiously, there is no comparison, but it coincides with me finally being shed of Verizon. Somebody ratted me out to PETA a few weeks ago when I started talking. I wonder if they'll rat me out to Verizon, too. But I'm free of Verizon. Their shitty service, their non-existent capacity around here, I am free of them and a very happy T-Mobile customer. It's wild for me to be able to just drive from here to Fayetteville and actually be able to maintain a phone call the entire way. Who knew? And of course, I have an internet from Joey. I got an internet the other day. You know, it's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes. It's an oldie but a goodie. It's still stuck in the Matrix part. Who the hell knows? M-A-Y-T-R-I-X. Giraffe gets it all going.
Today is Juneteenth, and I hope everybody is aware of the significance of this day. Juneteenth is a federal holiday in the United States commemorating the emancipation of enslaved African Americans in Texas. Major General Gordon Granger marched to Galveston, Texas, sailed into, then marched out of the ship and into Galveston, and proclaimed freedom for enslaved people in Texas. Yes, and this date means much to me as I am an African American. Giraffes were also brought to America in efforts to have them perform labors. They thought giraffes would be excellent to pick the fruits from the tall trees. However, we giraffes got the last laugh as we literally ate half of the fruits from the trees. Yes, it came to an end for giraffes in this country as we refused to surrender to the enslavers or render the bounty from the land. What am I going to do with that kangaroo?
Yes, got the cowbell handy. Joey, too, the kangaroo with a thought. Giraffe, you were speaking of fruits in the trees, and I can only imagine that Major General Gordon Granger must have really enjoyed the fruits of victory on Juneteenth when he ordered the freedom of slaves in Texas after the Battle of Galveston 2 years earlier, where during the Civil War, Confederate forces led by Major General John B. Magruder expelled the occupying Union forces from the city of Galveston January 1st, 1863. Oh, no, Junior. Yeah. General Granger and the Union, you could say, got some comeuppance.
Oh, you and those silly puns of yours. Joey always liked the song by Glen Campbell, Galveston. He always wondered if the song was about the Battle of Galveston when Campbell sings the waves crashing while the cannons were flashing, and he was cleaning his gun as he dreamt of Galveston. The first LP that Joey's mother ever bought him back in 1969 featured the song Galveston.
On other notes, Joey adds, and I was going to get, it is Morian Monday, you know. I was very sorry to hear of Morgantown, West Virginia native Bob Huggins' demise as head coach at West Virginia. I knew Bob Huggins as I attended his father's basketball camp in 1977, and 10 years later, he and Jerry Faust helped me with a college project at the University of Akron. Bob Huggins knew who he was and knew he was going places in the coaching world, as he and his father were well-respected in college coaching circles. He never seemed fazed about much of everyday life as they would discuss basketball strategy. However, I know Huggins was fazed by the loss of his father 2 years ago, and it appears as if he may be drinking heavily these days. He made a homophobic slur recently while speaking on a Cincinnati radio station, WLW. And this past weekend, just a few days before Father's Day, he was found very drunk in Pittsburgh while trying to change a flat tire after sideswiping a curb. Coach, I really hope you can pull it together. You have a lot of life to live. And this really does seem to be a spiral. When I covered the story of his remarks on WLW on one of those typically toxic sports talk radio programs, I wondered, frankly, if he was drunk, because I've seen Bob Huggins, Commode Huggin, drunk. I'm so sorry. That was low. That was as if it were planted in my brain by some little miscreant, tiny giraffe. But no, I got in an elevator with him in Las Vegas several years ago, and he needed not stand near any open flames. So he's not going to be West Virginia's head coach anymore, which means he's not going to be the most highest paid state employee in the state of West Virginia anymore. You know, I dream of living in a West Virginia where someday the highest paid state employee will be a scientist or something. Some dreams never come true. But you understand my yes. Anyway, back to Joey says, yesterday my wife and I saw the play Oklahoma with a classic, with such classic songs as Oh, What a Beautiful Morning, Oklahoma OK, and Kansas City. The Kansas City lyrics suggest that everything is up to date in Kansas City and that all is all the further we can go. Okay. What do slurs, Juneteenth, and Kansas City have in common? Oh, Junior, you had to ask. How can you talk about Oklahoma and leave out the pretty little Surrey with the fringe on top? With isinglass curtains she can pull right down in case there's a change in the weather. Well, anyway, good question, Junior. I'll get to that shortly. Yesterday was Father's Day, and I hope all of you that are lucky enough to have your father were able to visit with him in some form. I'd like to go back to Mother's Day, however, which was on the 14th of May. Actually, I wish to return to Mother's Day, May 9th, 2010, when now Oakland A's announcer and former Oakland A's pitcher pitched a perfect game. A perfect game is an amazing feat, which means not one batter ever reaches base during the entirety of the game. There have only been 23 perfect games in Major League Baseball history. I was at my mother and father's house on that day and just happened to look at the scores of the games. I noticed Dallas Braden had a perfect game going into the sixth inning. I immediately went to the Oakland television broadcast of that game and intently began watching. As the game entered the ninth inning, I asked my wife and mother to come over and watch the top of the ninth to see if Dallas Braden could complete the feat of a perfect game. Dallas Braden's grandmother was in attendance at the game that day. As it turns out, Dallas Braden's grandmother raised him because, sadly, Dallas Braden's mother died of cancer when he was a teenager, with the irony of it all being that Mother's Day is now Cancer Awareness for Major League Baseball. That was a script not even Hollywood could write. My wife, my mother, and I all watched with our hearts in our throats as the camera kept panning to Dallas Braden's grandmother in the stands, nervously clutching her hands. My wife lost her first husband to cancer, and my mother lost her grandfather, father, and baby sister all to cancer, so the moment had meaning for all of us. I lost my great-grandfather, Lily's husband, my grandfather, and an aunt that died shortly before I was born. As Dallas Braden was approaching the 27th batter, everybody who was watching this game was riveted by the moment. Dallas Braden did finish off the perfect game, and there was not a dry eye anywhere as Dallas Braden's grandmother ran onto the field sporting her pink cancer awareness wristband on her arm and hugged her grandson for all she was worth. Both were crying tears of joy and tears of lament, only wishing that Dallas's mother and Peggy Lindsay's daughter could have been there to witness the moment. Since that time, Dallas Braden has become the television color analyst of the Oakland A's, and until recently was partnered with a racist by the name of Glenn Kuiper during a game back in May in Kansas City. Kuiper began the game speaking of how he and Dallas Braden had visited the Negro Baseball Hall of Fame, only Kuiper did not say Negro, but rather said that word that has all the same letters as ginger. And judging by the way that word just rolled out of his mouth with great ease, it appeared he probably used that word often in the past. Kuiper was immediately suspended and eventually fired for an inexcusable remark. Everything is not really up to date in Kansas City, as the Negro Baseball Hall of Fame should change the name to the African American Baseball Hall of Fame. Well, I differ, Giraffe. I do. Because they were called the Negro Leagues. They were not the African American Leagues. It was the Negro League. Cool Papa Bell, Satchel Paige. So many players whose lives, well, their careers were amazing as they were, and even more so had they been allowed into Lily White Major League Baseball. By the way, the announcer Kuiper was justly fired as his remark went entirely too far off the prairie range, and justly so, the Oakland A's said to Kuiper, that is all the further you can go. Oh, for pity's sake. This has been Joey's Journal for Morin Monday, the 19th day of June, 2023, with Giraffe suggesting that white people should stop hating minorities considering you're becoming one. And there's a $20 all the further he can go challenge. Thank you. Thank you so much, Joey. Isn't it amazing how little moments can trigger such powerful trips down memory lane? Yesterday was Father's Day. I hope all the dads had a wonderful day, including the dads who, like me, are women. And for those of you whose dads are no longer around, yeah, it was a hard day. I have no doubt. I spent a lot of time thinking about my dad. And then there are the young dads. Over on my Facebook page, there's a picture of Ferg and me. And he's a dad. He's a dad of two of the most beautiful little girls that a dad could ever hope to have, or an opa could ever hope to be grandparent to. And one on the way. And it was not intentional. I love these little moments of irony. But it turns out that my beautiful, wonderful, kind, sweet daughter-in-law decided that she wanted all of her children's name to begin with L. And so it shall be. There will be three little girls whose names all begin with L. And lo and behold, over, oh goodness me, 150 years ago, there was another woman who lived in this community who married a Kincaid. Her name had been Ella Jane Ramsey. She became Ella Jane Kincaid. She was my great-grandmother. And she decided to name all of her children with names that began with L. That was not planned. It's just how the universe sort of looped it back around. My great-grandfather, in fact. So this would be my great-great-grandmother. Who would not have been Ella Jane. No, this was Sarah Elizabeth Gwynne Kincaid, Welsh folk, witch folk, those Gwynnes. No, really. My multi-great-grandfather, her dad, was a local witch doctor. Yarbs and the like, and healing of the sick farm animals, and so and they're not like they're any veterinarians. But my great great grandmother would go on to name one of her sons Lavigi Lawrence Kincaid. Lavigi. And all of her children's names began with L. Her youngest, well, I actually met him when I was a tiny, tiny little baby. His name was Loammy Imboden Kincaid. I sure could pick some names. Loammy apparently comes from Hebrew and means, "You are not my son." And the giving of the name Imboden kind of indicated that, well, great-grandma knew whose son Loammy was. And as he grew to adulthood, and even up to the time when I saw him as a 3-year-old, everybody just called him Coot. Yes, Ralphs, they are. And so there will be three little girls with L for a first name, including my little June bug, which comes from her middle name. That was an interesting little digression. But yeah, so Sunday was Father's Day. Saturday, Saturday was Pride over in Beckley. I finally made it to at least one Pride event. I'd missed everything before. But this was my third Beckley Pride, and it was special, as they all are. And I've made a tradition out of wearing white at Pride, because that way I can accessorize with things that are pink and blue. And, oh, made new friends, and saw a, met some folks who are, artisans not far away from here in Oak Hill, and they harvest local flora. And so I came home with a jar of, and you know, I can eat like a molecule of this on a tiny little microscopic speck of bread, and that'll be enough. But I knew that Annette and my daughter-in-law and the girls would probably, well, the youngest one's in the middle. Never mind. But anyway, dig this. I mean, this is wonderful. So, I got white clover jelly, red clover jelly, and you know how I wax rhapsodic at the beginning of spring, because it's the beginning of spring, wax rhapsodic about the blooming of the redbud trees. Well, Annette had told me, and I'd never heard of it, about redbud jelly. You can make jelly from the blossoms of the redbud tree, which is indigenous to Appalachia. And so I got a jar of redbud jelly, which was heavenly. And then, and this was like a holy grail, a bottle of, and for those of you who grew up around the things, you know how it is when they bloom. You pull the little honeysuckle blossom off, and you pull the little, what is it, the stamen out, and then you put the tip into the honeysuckle in, and you get that little burst of honeysuckle going on, that little bit of nectar, and it's blissfully, blissfully delightful. And the work that must go into this to gather all those clover blossoms, all those redbud blossoms, and all those honeysuckles. So I have a bottle of honeysuckle syrup. And it, I tasted it, and it's exactly what I expected it to be, and I'm terribly excited. I want a piece of, like, oh, I don't know, salt rice and bread toast with lots of local creamery butter on it from Greenbrier Valley Creamery. And a little bit of that honeysuckle syrup, and that will be just delightful. Or maybe a little drizzle over some honeydew melon or cantaloupe, or a lot of potential there. But Pride was fun. And if any of you want to see, there's a few pictures from Pride. It's over on my Facebook page. If we're not friends, send me a friend request. But you should be able to see it one way or the other. As to Pride, Scary Jerry says, so many observations about the weekend. Looks like it was a little rainy, but the parade was looks to have been quite the affair down in South Florida. Thank you for that, Scary Jerry. Meanwhile, it being Moran Monday, I had an internet from Donald J. Trump earlier.
They want to take away my freedom, friend.
Oh, God. Wait, you know what we're going to need for this? You know what this calls for? I'll tell you what this calls for. Calliope music. Yes, Calliope. Yeah.
Friend, The Biden administration wants to put me in jail for 400 years. My crime? Running for president as a political outsider determined to destroy the rigged system that has crushed hard-working Americans for far too long. But it's not just my freedom that's on the ballot in 2024. No, believe me. It's also yours. It's very simple. The deep state is only after me because I fight for you. And if they see that they can successfully get away with weaponizing the legal system at the federal level to silence opposition and crush dissent, then it will not end with me. America has never been this close to the brink of tyranny. You are our only hope of saving America.
You are our only hope.
Please make a contribution to save America.
Or, you know, his next loan payment.
Before our nation reaches the point of no return for 1,500% impact. Thank you. Picture of Donald Trump.
I didn't play the clip that usually goes in front of the Moran Monday Calliope music from those Halcon days. No. Emilio, don't start. I've never had red bud jelly. It's red bud. It is red bud. I know I enunciate better than that. Stop it. Stop it, Spock. Yes, Ralph's the Calliope. And that's how old this program is. Not this iteration. This program is live. But it goes all the way back to post-Katrina when Anderson Cooper was standing in Jackson Square in New Orleans and remarked upon the lovely sound of the Calliope. Uh-huh. Also having given us later the pronunciation of H-A-L-C-Y-O-N as Halcon. How convenient. Ew. But honestly, the clip, the Moran Monday clip that goes with precedes that song, that Calliope music on many Mondays, comes from Blazing Saddles. And never in all the Moran Mondays that this program has known, never have we had a better use for this clip.
But it's not just my freedom that's on the ballot in 2024. It's also yours. It's very simple. The deep state is only after me because I fight for you.
Who believes this? People who used to be rock-ribbed Reagan Republicans? Or are they just all dead or in the nursing home? I don't know. But God, this fits.
My crime, running for president as a political outsider.
You know, once you've been president, I don't think you get to call yourself a political outsider anymore. It's not just that I think that, it's a fact.
Determined to destroy the rigged system that has crushed hardworking white Americans. Oh, I said the quiet part out loud. For far too long.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know. Morons.
Morons. Because nobody else, it is not possible. If you could, I don't know, seance up the shade of zombie P.T. Barnum, he'd say, no, this way to the egress, that worked. Yeah, that's just too much. Because nobody, the feds are not going to come after Joe and Jane Maggot and put them in jail, too, if Donald Trump is convicted or doesn't become president. Because, among other things, Joe and Jane Maggot, while they may be sympathetic to the Maggot King, well, they never squirreled away classified documents relating to, oh, I don't know, our nuclear secrets, plans for a preemptive attack on Iran, etc., etc. They never did.
America has never been this close to the brink of tyranny.
Well, at least he admits that we aren't at the brink of tyranny. We're just close to it. Which means there's time to save it by never letting him near the levers of power ever again. Because the things he has in store for the Americans, he doesn't like. Hi, I'm one of those. Are nothing if not tyrannical. Possibly even genocidal.
They want to put me in jail for 400 years.
No, they don't. No one. No one. Not any. And no member of the Justice Department would ever say that. Because it is not in the purview of the Justice Department to determine sentencing upon conviction of a crime. That falls to the Article 3 judicial branch of the Constitution of the United States, and the judge who has the power and the authority and the majesty and the flowing robes to impose sentences. And no way would any federal judge, God knows there's too many of them that are maggots, that would just say, no, why don't we just write you a big fat check instead, Donald?
That would be fine. Do I still have to be convicted?
No. That's if the charges were all served, all convictions, and all served consecutively. And the most surefire way to get a case bounced back down on appeal would be for a judge to, based on a jury, make a finding of guilt, and then impose a 400-year sentence on a 76-year-old man. It is, to use a word from another favorite movie of mine, inconceivable. But then again, these are just simple farmers. You know, morons. And the bottom line is it's all a hustle. So back to Juneteenth for a second. This past Thursday, Ron Monkey Up DeClantis, who only became governor in his first term with the support of real live, honest to goodness, no kidding Nazis. You can look it up. I don't just make things up. Well, he cut funding for the Black History Month celebration, you know, next February in Orlando. Actually, he vetoed the spending. He didn't cut that. He just vetoed it. And then he hacked out $200,000 of the funding for the Black Music Legacy Festival in Florida. And it's become part of what the law calls a pattern in practice. Because last year, he vetoed $1 million that had been appropriated for Valencia College. They wanted to make a film about the 1920 Ocoee Election Day Massacre in Florida. That was when a mob of homicidal, maniac white people slaughtered dozens of black people in Florida who wanted to vote. And now, he's made a promise that he's going to rename Fort Liberty. Sit, Liberty. Sit. Whoop. He's going to change the name of Fort Liberty from Fort Liberty to Fort Braxton Bragg. It used to be called Fort Braxton Bragg. It was changed to Fort Liberty. It also happens to be in North Carolina, so he's going to have to become president first. In case anyone doesn't know, Braxton Bragg was another one of those treasonous, traitorous, America-hating, filthy Confederates who took up arms against his own country, committed treason against the United States, and deserted the United States military. He was also an enslaver, and that's why his name was finally taken off of Fort, the military post in North Carolina, has since renamed Fort Liberty. Because, you see, renaming Fort Bragg, changing it away from the odious name of a filthy traitor, well, changing that name was woke. And it smacks of critical race theory. We believe in teaching kids facts and how to think, but we do not believe they should have an agenda imposed on them. Beep, boop, beep, beep, boop, I am a bot, he earlier said. When you try to beep, boop, beep, beep, use black history, boop, boop, beep, beep, to shoehorn in queer theory, beep, beep, boop, boop, beep, 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 boop, you are clearly trying to use that for political purposes, boop, boop, beep, boop, boop, beep, ah. So, I mean, I couldn't make this stuff up. But it's not just him. No, we found out recently that former Vice President Mike Pencilneck Geek also wants to return the name of that military installation in North Carolina to the name of a Confederate traitor and perpetrator of treason. Who, to be fair, should have swung by the neck until dead in the aftermath of that conflict. He was a cranky old bastard, Braxton Bragg. But he was lionized in the years after the Civil War. In point of fact, the state of Alabama had a governor who, when a baby, because that's when the naming usually takes place, y'all, had actually been named Braxton Bragg Comer, C-O-M-E-R. Curiously, we have a member of the United States Congress from Kentucky, Stan, who is also a Comer. Naturally, he's a maggot. But that seems an appropriate place to begin the program. We will be digging deeper. In fact, well, let's have a little more monkey up news, shall we? Because he is scared shitless of California Governor Gavin Newsom, who is not at all afraid of him and his go-go boots, his kinky boots. Well, he's got a new campaign ad out, Monkey Up does. And he actually thinks he wants to take on Gavin Newsom.
The debate is already settled. California's liberal governance is a disaster. Ron DeSantis' conservative policies have Florida thriving and would do so for the nation.
Beep, beep, boop, boop, beep. I mean, they write like robot.
California's population has dropped by more than a half million people.
Where has the population gone?
The American people as a whole have voted with their feet. And you compare Florida
versus California.
Governor Gavin Newsom admits the state has not made progress on the homeless crisis.
Rising crime in San Francisco.
Needles and feces outside.
These children are witnessing drug use, violence, sex acts, public defecation, and urination on a daily basis.
We have had a great experiment in governing philosophies.
I see what everybody's seen, asking myself, what the hell is going on? I mean, look like a third world country.
We've witnessed a great American exodus from state.
Did you notice that? That was some clever editing by the Monkey Up campaign. We've seen what everybody else has seen. We look like a third world country. But notice how they edited it.
What's going on? I mean, look like a third world country.
We've witnessed a...
They took the RY off. We look like a third world...
Great American exodus from states governed by leftist politicians.
California exodus certainly continues.
Businesses are leaving the state at a faster pace.
Florida is the fastest growing state in the nation.
Florida's unemployment numbers are historically low.
Crime in the Sunshine State dropped to a 50-year low.
This is a result of better governance in states like Florida. It is a result of poor governance in these left-wing states. That's why people are moving.
What he won't do is go head-to-head with Gavin Newsom, because he's a pissant. And, oh, by the way, needles and feces. Ron, needles and feces to Klantis. I think that's going to wind up being another reference. Matt in San Francisco noting, I have to get out more. I've missed the feces and the sex act. Does that mean you've seen the needles, Matt? I mean, you're our, you know, between you and Cynthia, you're our, and Tom and Sunny San Rafael, you're our Bay Area correspondents. No mention there in the Ron Monkey Up to Klantis ad, the fact that, well, Florida's fucking sinking. Climate change is wreaking havoc on Florida. It's illegal to say the words sea level and rise all together at the same time in Florida. Never mind that everybody from the Human Rights Campaign to the NAACP to Hispanic advocacy groups have issued travel advisories saying, and I'm paraphrasing here, for the sweet love of God, stay the hell away from Florida. And frankly, if Florida's population were rising, and it may be, it's nothing I would brag about. Florida is so far past its carrying capacity that, well, every time I think of Florida, I think of Pompeii. No nearby volcanoes or anything, but that's nothing a passing hurricane can't manage. No. And then there's the fact that, well, if we go back to Reichspropaganda Minister Josef Goebbels, he said, accuse the other side of that which you are guilty, because it ain't like the drug crisis isn't in Florida. It ain't like homelessness isn't an issue in Florida. It's not like the education system isn't collapsing under the weight of fascism in Florida. Under Ron Monkey Up, duh, Klantis. Oh, little spider's not hurting anybody. Leave her alone, Robin. Because, and Florida is one of the worst places in the country to be black, to be Hispanic, to be gay, to be lesbian, to be trans, to be anything but white, cisgender,
heterosexual, male, and of course, Christian. Those are just facts. Oh, and speaking of which, a little gnat sound, if you will. This comes, this audio comes from New Hampshire Stan. Concord, New Hampshire, at a place called Teetotaler. It's a cafe. The cafe has its regulars. And so there was a gathering there this past weekend. And so someone who goes by the name of Juicy Garland posted this video shot from inside Teetotaler. And what's on the outside are real live, no kidding, Nazis. Thank you, John, in Central PA. And America has a far worse Nazi program problem. Well, in Florida, it's a program. It's a feature, not a flaw. But, well, New Hampshire is a maggot state, too. Not quite as bad as Florida. But then again, very few places are. Texas is out there saying, hold my beer. Alabama, etc. But outside this venue, Teetotaler, a gathering of masked Nazis. First of all, most states used to have anti-masking laws, preventing people in public from covering their faces to hide their identities. A lot of that went back to the aftermath of the Civil War, and they were part of anti-Klan statutes. So that eventually, when they wanted to wear their ugly, pointy little hats, they would have to show their faces. I don't expect the maggot legislature of New Hampshire to enact anti... Because, you know,
well, wait, I thought y'all wanted us to wear masks.
Well, these masks, these balaclavas and the like, they're not going to keep anybody from getting sick. They're just going to keep sick people's identities from being discovered. And so outside the venue, we have this.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
They're all wearing the same thing, khakis and charcoal gray t-shirts or hoodies. And they are standing there in unison, Sieg Heiling. This used to be a rarity in America. You know, they got to march down the street in Skokie, Illinois, and intimidate the Jewish population there. I hate Illinois Nazis. But now, in 2023, it's just a day that ends in Y. And I'm really still struggling with the thing I was talking about on Friday in making the query, What does, and don't take issue with me for the word I'm about to use. What does an enlightened society do about a Nazi problem? How many millions of deaths could have been avoided in the 1930s and 1940s had Germany gone to the trouble to suppress with extreme prejudice gangs of violent Nazis? And because, well, I don't even have to put violent there, do I? I mean, Nazi implies violence. If these punk-ass Nazis could have gotten through the doors, you heard them banging on the glass windows. God alone knows what they would have done to the families inside that venue. They were terrorizing children. The event went on anyway. Yeah, Nazis on a Sunday morning. Because, well, Nazis gonna Nazi. Matt in San Francisco says, bye, Felicia. From what I've seen, the right-wingers are the ones leaving California. I say good riddance. Yeah, Matt, they're moving to Arkansas. Remember what Governor Jethreen Bodine said? Yeah, y'all come on here. Matt notes, I can get through my day even happier by not seeing their hateful Let's Go Brandon bumper stickers. Adding, Matt does, moron totals. I'd recommend we have them report their moron status during the census, but I'm not sure they'd be able to follow instructions.
They're treading on my liberty. Sit, Liberty. Sit.
But that's 2023's America. And then, because it is More In Monday, we have an installment from the demon dentist of the desert, Paul Gosar. Paul Gosar is getting his inner fascist on in a hearing that was covered last week on C-SPAN 2. He called for the deputization of every American citizen, and he wasn't being ironic.
Well, I like the fact that you said it was an opportunity, because I want to go back to those videotapes. A picture's worth 1,000 words, is it?
Correct. Yes.
They're all going to come after us regardless.
Yes, sir.
So it seems to me like we ought to be making this big push and maybe turn the tide. And for example, how about a bounty? Make everybody deputies. And look in those tapes as to people that are undercover. Antifa.
The pipe bomber.
Yeah. Absolutely right. Well, I like the fact.
Now, this was all about the ongoing cockamamie harebrained theory that January 6, 2021 was an inside job perpetrated by federal law enforcement authorities and Antifa dressed up as maggots. Because you know self-respecting members of Antifa would just love to put on some maggot gear. Maybe some luau shirts like the Boogaloo Incel Tactical Command Headquarters Executive Staff. So he's... The demon dentist of the desert seems to think that if you just go over the January 6th footage enough, you'll eventually start seeing hidden Antifa and hidden FBI agents. More on that in a minute. See what I did there? More on that in a minute. But a couple of minutes, just a little observation here. Paul Gosar, well, there's something wrong with Paul Gosar. If dead Rush Limbaugh, the Pineapple Princess of the most nether of nether regions in perdition, were to see this, I'm sure he would mock him as he once mocked Michael J. Fox. If you have the opportunity and you have not seen the Michael J. Fox documentary, I highly recommend it. Heartbreaking. Very brave on his part. And I want to be serious, and I'm not going to do a Rush Limbaugh. And I'm not going to mock or make fun of Paul Gosar over what appears to be a profound illness. Now, I refer to Paul Gosar as the demon dentist of the desert on every possible occasion I get when I mention his name. Because he's a whack job. He's not a good... He's not a good person. He's a sick and vicious right winger. But in this video clip from No Lie with Brian Tyler Cohen, this clip from C-SPAN 2 that he tweeted, Paul Gosar no longer has the ability to keep his body still. And in fact, his movements are distinctly reminiscent of video of Michael J. Fox. Parkinson's is a horrible, horrible disease. Begins with tremors, and the next thing you know, you cannot still your body. And yet, somehow, Paul Gosar's hatred outstrips any need he has to get well or improve his circumstances. There's no known cure yet. Michael J. Fox and his foundation are, by God, working on that. No help from Paul Gosar, of course. And as he sits there, unable to control the bobbing and weaving of his own musculature, Paul Gosar is utterly oblivious to the fact that, well, he's now among a class of people that Nazis would like to simply eliminate. And not just Nazis, members of his own party. Because remember, we've talked about this on a number of occasions. This goes back to 2012 when cranky old Uncle Ron Paul, speaking to a crowd in, of course, New Hampshire, asked about the uninsured crisis. Well, what do you want to do? Just let them die in the hallways? And there at St. Anselm College, the gathered teabagger faithful roared and clapped and declared their approval of letting uninsured people simply die in the halls of swamped hospitals. And people began asking below the video, does he have Parkinson's? Does he have a demon stuck in him? Something physically wrong with him? Does he have some sort of medical situation going on? Looks a bit like Parkinson's or other neuro issues. And, of course, Paul Gosar was up to his demon dentist of the desert eyebrows in plotting the insurrection, the terrorist attack of January 6, 2021. He was at the December 21st meeting that planned the entire terrorist attack. He also sought a pardon from Nitwit Nero. And then there's this video from years gone by from his own siblings. Every time the opportunity comes up, Paul Gosar's siblings get in front of a camera to make a video and make an ad for whoever the Democrat is running against Paul Gosar.
Paul Gosar, the congressman, isn't doing anything to help rural America.
Paul's absolutely not working for his district.
If they care about health care, they care about their children's health care, they would hold him to account. If they care about jobs, they would hold him to account. If he actually cared about people in rural Arizona, I bet he'd be fighting for Social Security, for better access to health care. I bet he would be researching what is the most insightful water policy to help the environment of Arizona sustain itself and be successful.
And he's not listening to you, and he doesn't have your interests at heart. My name is Tim Gosar.
David Gosar.
Grace Gosar.
Joan Gosar.
Gaston Gosar.
Jennifer Gosar.
Paul Gosar is my brother.
My brother.
And I endorse Dr. Brill.
Dr. Brill.
Wholeheartedly endorse Dr. David Brill for Congress.
I'm Dr. David Brill, and I approve this message.
Paul Gosar, the congressman.
Sadly, Dr. David Brill did not win that race. Because out in Arizona stand, the teabaggers, the maggots, the what have yous, they won't even listen to somebody's own siblings. And Paul Gosar comes from a big family. When they say that he is toxic. It's deeply disturbing. But remember, any sympathy one might have for him is tempered by the fact that he still wants to overturn constitutional governance in the United States. They say that that little Austrian corporal was well on down the same road Paul Gosar appears to be on by the time he finally decided to take matters into his own hands. Some of that may have had to do with the damage he received during the attempt to blow him to kingdom come. Missed him by that much. And thank you, Flavio. Neo-Nazi group and its leaders charged with civil rights violations in New Hampshire. Really, says Flavio, from WGBH yesterday. New Hampshire Attorney General John M. Formella on Tuesday charged the Nationalist Socialist Club and two of its leaders with violating the state's Civil Rights Act and conspiring to violate the New Hampshire Civil Rights Act. The group is also known by the acronym NSC 131, 131 being the alphanumeric code for ACA, Anti-Communist Action and Anti-Capitalist Action. Christopher Hood, last known to be of Pepperell, Massachusetts, Leo Anthony Kalinin of Manchester, New Hampshire. They're both part of the vicious White Lives Matter movement. One might recall that Candy Owens, and the artist known as The, wore White Lives Matter's t-shirts at Fashion Week in Paris last year. They were not indicted for what was done in Concord, New Hampshire yesterday, but rather for an incident from July 30th, 2022, where Christopher Hood and his Nazi cronies hung a Keep New England White banner from an overpass on over US 1 in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, without permission. And under New Hampshire law, doing that, motivated by race, constitutes a violation of the Civil Rights Act. The Attorney General, John Formella, said, "So hanging that banner without permission was a trespass. What was written on the banner makes it pretty clear that the trespass was motivated by race, and so that was a violation of our Civil Rights Act." This story goes back to January 18th of this year. It doesn't seem to have slowed them down, and it does appear to be the same group because they are dressed in similar fashion. The Southern Poverty Law Center and the Anti-Defamation League also see that gang as being like unto the Sturmabteilung, the SA, who were fascist thugs and bully boys who, in the late 20s and early 30s, tormented LGBTQ people, Jews, members of trade unions, people of the political left. They've alleged that workers at Brigham Hospital and Harvard Medical School are anti-white because they worked on equity in health treatment and health outcomes. They protested at the St. Paddy's Day parade in South Boston, bringing a banner that said, "Keep Boston Irish." And they wore matching khaki pants and shirts. So none of these legal actions appear to have had any particular impact, because there they were Sunday morning in Concord, New Hampshire, doing the things that, well, that Nazis do. Ralph says, "So in your opinion, Paul Gosar has Parkinson's?" I'm not qualified to have an opinion on that, but it certainly does look like some sort of neurological defect or neurologic deficit. Because I don't think anybody would ever, I don't think any but the most seasoned of actors could pretend that. But his hatred exceeds Gosar's. His hatred exceeds his own desire for any kind of peace or tranquility. True believers, y'all. True believers. Let me see something here. Oh, by the way, we are trying to catch up, as Amelia says, maybe Gosar has tardive dyskinesia. Possible. Armchair diagnoses here. No worries, Flavio. I knew that story was from earlier. I thought it dovetailed nicely. Randy Radar asking, Night of the Long Knives, anyone? I know. In the ongoing saga of things the maggots are mad at, they're mad at Sports Illustrated now. Maggots have been purchasing the swimsuit edition and masturbating happily away to the swimsuit edition for yay verily generations, but here we are.
I guess you didn't take the hint from Butt Light.
Because they're mad that Kim Petras was one of the cover models for the swimsuit issue. I did my part. I purchased the Kim Petras cover. Martha Stewart was a cover. Megan Fox, Brooks Nader, and, you know, Grammy winner Kim Petras. And so now they're tearing up magazines for freedom. Saying things like,
I guess you didn't learn from Butt Light.
I think they're going to be just fine without magazines with the pages all stuck together. But more on that. See what I did there? Later. We've got so much to do. Matt in San Francisco pointing out as to Gosart, some psych meds cause involuntary muscle movement too. Yeah, that would be your tardive dyskinesia. Thank you, Matt. So, fundraising. I haven't mentioned it. I don't think I even gave the total earlier. We begin a brand new and the final. Well, no, it's not. The next to last week of the month of June. In a $1,300 fundraising hole. It would be wonderful, and there is, in fact, a challenge on the table, courtesy of Joey and Giraffe, the Kansas City challenge. And it would be wonderful if we could somehow not finish June in as big a hole as we finished May. Made some deposits today to the, and took those into account, by the way, to the bank account, credit union account. Thanks again to those who participate via the U.S. Postal Service. The mailing address is at headon.live. It's 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, BECKLEYWV 25801. Checks and money orders made payable to The Horn, not to Robin Kincaid. The Horn. And thanks to one particular individual for sending the Jackson 5 to play a three-night stand in Beckley. Thank you to Ralphs for meeting Joey and Giraffe's challenge. Thank you so much. And so now we are down to 1250. Thank you so much for getting us started, Ralphs. Let me clear a couple of things. Let's run over to the stress line and see who we've got. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Darlene.
I'm Connecticut.
Yeah.
Hey, Robin.
How are you?
Okay. Beautiful day here. I don't want to rub it in. We're 75 degrees, and it's beautiful. I think we might even be higher in temp because I'm comfortable
The weekend here was exquisite. We got up to 89 yesterday. I could feel freckles forming.
I
could feel freckles forming on my pale white shoulders.
Well, I can't compete with that. We were kind of stuck in the 60s on Saturday, and then it warmed up a bit on Father's Day. First of all, nod to a respectful nod to Juneteenth. Very important day today. And I just want to tell you, I don't know if you can hear me okay. Can you hear me? Can you hear me now?
I hear you great.
You sound very okay. You sound very distant. Like the volume is very low. And I have my phone jacked up to the highest volume. So I just want to mention that. I mean, I can hear you okay, but it's a little bit of I've really got to listen closely. So there is something wrong with the volume on your end.
The problem is if I push the, because I don't know where this problem came from, and I've been all over the computer. If I push it up to where you hear me nice and loud, then I get all crunchy on the live broadcast.
Okay. So, I don't know. I think I noticed an increase in the volume real quick. So, I don't know if you're just talking closer to the phone or into the mic or something. That sounds a little bit better. So, I don't know. You made some sort of an adjustment there, unless you were testing it out and whatever it is.
It was a
you're
tweak.
Describing. Okay. You're distant again. But anyway, I just want to mention it. So, Paul Gosar, he struck me as having Parkinson's disease. That's what I was assuming, looking at his movements, very, very similar to Michael J. Fox, who happens to be a few towns over from me. He has his palatial estate, he and his wife, Tracy Pollan, in the town that I grew up in. I have not looked at him, I have not observed him lately, but, you know, that is consistent. Obviously, it is progressive and it gets worse. So, as time goes on. So, the way the involuntary movements, the twitches, the tremors, that kind of thing, seems reminiscent of Parkinson's. So I would agree. Again, we don't know for sure. I've been thinking about contemplating and just kind of mulling over in my mind about the wealth gap in this nation. You know, when you look at somebody like a Harlan Crowe or a Jeff Bezos or an Elon Musk, the new, you know, the American oligarchs, basically, I find it so frustrating as a quote-unquote normal American or the average American, as our political elite likes to call us, the average American. We're anything but that. I mean, I look at how, and I don't remember what his name was. We used to call him Brother Somebody. He was from Wisconsin. Or maybe it was someone
who was Brother Albert.
From Vermont.
Brother Albert.
I know it was Brother Albert, and there was another gentleman I used to call in from Vermont. It might have been him, where he just went, and it just stopped me cold. This was years ago, but he said, "Yo, everybody, the fucking game board is rigged. The game board is rigged." You know? And I was just thinking about, you know, what makes these people tick? And why, you know, what is it with this extreme wealth? It seems like it's not enough. And why they want to go to the next level of just pure and absolute power. With Harlan Crowe, who clearly has control over the Supreme Court, Elon Musk, who is redefining free speech to include hate speech. And it's like, towards what end? You know, they are going to die one day. They can't take it with them. They want to subjugate everybody else. And it's like, why? You know, it's not even really necessary. Most Americans, I think, just want to be able to make enough money where if an emergency comes up, they're not one paycheck away from financial ruin. If they need to put a new roof on the house, they can do that. If they want to retire at a decent age, they can do that.
If they need to rent a car because their one car had a blowout, they can do that.
Exactly. Or get the new tires, or, you know, and it's not that we're not asking for that much. And as you said, work is honorable, and I'm still thinking all of this through because all of us at one point or another have thought or have been brainwashed into thinking that, you know, one day we're going to make it. One day we're going to have the multi-billions. One day we need to do that in order to survive, in order to make it in this world, in order to feel good about ourselves. And to a certain degree, that's true, I guess, in a reasonable sense, that there's enough to go around, but they, the oligarchs, the even members of the political class, want us to think that there's not enough to go around. But what they're talking about is
it's always a zero-sum game with them, and that works to their benefit.
Well, but does it? Does it really? Like, why does it work to their benefit? That's kind of what I'm contemplating here. You know, how many more yachts can you get? Like, whatever her name is. DeVos. DeVos. And again, they can't take it with them. And look at where it goes in its logical conclusion to have only a few individuals amassing all the wealth, because it is a redistribution. There is a redistribution to them. Eventual outcome, it's like there's poor people everywhere all over the streets and disease, and it's like, do you really want to live in any country on this planet that has that? Because eventually it comes back to them. Oh, well, you know, they can turn around and say, well, they're building their, you know, flying off to, you know, above the earth and all of that stuff. But ultimately, I just don't think it's sustainable. And it doesn't have to happen. And the only thing that I can think that sort of explains it is what Bernie Sanders has been saying, you know, that greed is, it's like a disease, that it's like an addiction. And although a majority of these multi-millionaires and billionaires seem to go that extreme and suffer from that addiction, everybody like me thinks, oh, you know, if I were to get all that money, I wouldn't be that way. But I started thinking about it, it's like, you know, I bet you that shouldn't be accepted as reality, as a fact. You know, there are many stories of people who win the lottery, you know, they win multi-millions, 200, 300 million, and then within like a few years, usually it's a three-year mark, they're broke again. They blew it all. They didn't really know how to manage the enormous responsibility that comes with all of that money. So I can only think that these are very sick people. And Harlan Crow is a prime example of somebody who I would love to poke a little bit further into what his total collection, not the memorabilia, is. I don't buy it for one second that, you know, he has amassed this collection as a way of reminding himself, or, you know, trying to somehow remind somebody, I guess, of the horrors of World War II.
Right, right. One does not note the historical horror of Auschwitz by having the uniform worn by the commandant. You know what I mean?
If he was, yes, I know. Well, certainly in your private collection, certainly really serious about the bullshit he's throwing at everybody. What he would do, I would think, is buy it and then donate it to, it could be the Holocaust Museum in D.C. What's their benefit? You know, to essentially hand it over is clearly a part of history, right? But say, this is for you to determine what you want to do with this. Because they could, to me, it would make more sense for a Holocaust Museum, potentially. I can't speak for people who are Jewish, but to me it would make more sense for them to decide how this should be handled, or victims of the Holocaust, or their descendants. To keep it in his private collection? And where the hell did he get this stuff? How did he acquire this? Is another question that I have. Do you kind of see where I'm going with this?
I think I do.
Why are you keeping it as your private collection? And I didn't understand, like, that statue.
Why is it? Why is it a fetish object?
Exactly.
And I don't mean I don't mean that in any sort of term of like sexual deviance or anything like that. Fetish has broader meaning.
And when we think about the artwork that was lost, or, you know, stolen, where is that? Does he have that too?
Yeah. Who knows?
Artwork that Jews had?
Yeah.
Does he have lamps that were made of the skin? The, you know, lampshades were made of the skin of Jews?
Right. Does he have a few does he have a few gold teeth, perhaps?
Exactly. You know, because this guy is, you know, Sheldon Whitehouse, Senator Whitehouse, talked about the creepy billionaires. And I love the fact that he keeps bringing that up. He has a whole series. If you sign up with him on YouTube, it's called The Scheme. And it's like, it starts The Scheme number one, episode one. And then it just keeps going and going and going, where he focuses on the creepy billionaires, the Supreme Court, how the dark money, everything. It's a whole series of on this. And I'm really glad that he keeps calling them the creepy billionaires. And you mention Martha Stewart. Okay. Fine, 80-something.
81.
81, she was pictured on the Sports Illustrated. I believe she's a billionaire herself. Certainly when she went public with her company, she became a billionaire, like, overnight, multimillionaire. But she recently came out and said, basically started banging on the roofs, you know, the rest of us, for not going back to work and being in the offices. I don't know if you heard that.
No.
That by saying, yeah, he did. She's a bitch, man. I'm sorry. You know, she came out after, you know, and obviously post, well, we're not really post COVID, but that people need to get back in the offices. All of that, you know, glorious office space is being wasted. People need to get back, you know, again, hammer, you know, again, the working slobs that the rest of us are in their eyes. So I have no empathy for her, and everybody wants to elevate her because, you know, she's got an incredible ego and with, you know, 81. Again, I'm happy for that. But on the flip side, I don't know, when it's formed, kind of like J.K. Rowling did, you know?
Right, yeah.
So Jeff Bezos, another cretin who, you know, can't get his yacht through a bridge in Holland or something and is demanding that they do the bridge for him. You know, Elon Musk didn't, like Donald Trump, didn't acquire their own wealth from hard work. They inherited it. But I frustrated as I look at a situation where, oh, hello, Mr. Rabbit. I got a rabbit right here. About,
oh, you've got a visitor?
Yeah, and I got a baby rabbit over in the back here, but look, came right up to me. Hi, sweetie. So it's really cute, like right here. So they're feeling comfortable with me. So Jeff Bezos, he did not, you know, his wife, Mackenzie, she's the one that came up with the idea for Amazon. Not him. Okay. So she was smart and made sure to cut herself a damn good deal. She has more money than she can give away. She's somebody who has managed to kind of walk that fine line where she has so much wealth that she can't give it away fast enough. And she's trying to help organizations and trying to improve the political system so it's more democratic, okay? So you've got one person there. There are a few others, but they're rare. You've got somebody who he's kind of in a weird place, is the really old Jeff, who's in his 90s. What the heck is his name? He said his secretary winds up paying more.
Warren Buffett.
Buffett. But he took advantage of the tax laws and barely, you know, a few years ago and paid virtually nothing in taxes. So even though he's saying on one side of his mouth that, you know, this is wrong, my secretary shouldn't be paying more than me, on the other side of his mouth, he's still taking advantage of the legal loopholes, which really shouldn't be legal. So I frustrated because I don't feel I should be paying more in taxes than Donald Trump or Warren Buffett. Or just Elon Musk. That is so flagrant. Well, and then when you have Biden.
Darlene, do you see any degree of nuance or difference between, say, Leon Scum
and Harlan Crow and Jeff Bezos? Or is it all just potato,
no.
potato?
It's also potato, potato expressed in different ways. I would say, well, you know what? I can't even really pick which one is far more doing something that's far more damaging. Because
I see Leon Scum and Harlan Crow as not in a different league, but off a different axis, mm-hmm. if you will. I mean, Bezos, they're all egomaniacs and probably all sociopaths. No doubt about that in my mind.
Right. Right.
I think Bezos, left to his own devices, he mainly just wants to play with his dick rocket. Whereas Crow has bought himself a Supreme Court.
Yeah.
And Leon Scum is trying to put a wannabe fascist dictator in the White House.
Right.
I don't know if that provides enough space between the two. I'm of the opinion that a country that has billionaires is a country that's screwing up. And, you know, getting close to a trillionaire here and a trillionaire there. Oligarchies are never good for human culture. You know, if you want to get anthropological about it for a second, you think back to the potlatch cultures of the Pacific Northwest. After a while, when enough wealth had been accumulated by one individual, they'd throw a huge party, give a shit ton of stuff away, and then burn the rest and start fresh. Or what I understand, and I may be wrong, about Inca culture, you know, Andean Pacific Coast culture, where when the Inca, and, you know, Inca was a term for a ruler, it was not the culture, but when the Inca died, the Inca got to keep all of his shit, and the new Inca had to acquire new shit, had to build his own palace, had to acquire his own wealth. And that's a radically different approach from, say, the Western time. I mean, you go further back in time to the ancient Chinese imperial, not, well, imperial is probably the wrong word, but yeah. And we see the same thing in Mesopotamia, in early sedentary society. When the headman dies, everybody else marches in the hole with him and goes too. Now, I'm not advocating for that by any stretch of the imagination.
But there's something to be
said about the perceived transferability of wealth.
Exactly. You know, if I'm understanding you correctly, I mean, one of the things you said was that they gave it all away, you know, because it's supposed to be cycling in and out, in and out, in and out.
Whereas when
the wealth is supposed,
yeah. Whereas it tends, you know, with extremely wealthy people, it tends to just get parked.
Precisely, and it seems like lately it's really hard to make money. You know, just to do the basics. Just to, you know, I think most of us want to just, you know, have a sweet little home sweet home, be able to celebrate and. Fix it when something goes broke, be able to retire at a decent age, have a little bit of a nest egg so, you know, they feel comfortable, donate, get involved. If they want to work, you know, into their later years, they have that option, but it's not necessarily required. And I think one of the things that's perpetrated against the American people, whether they come right out and say it or not, certainly is this whole concept that there's not enough to go around. You know, it's this tight-fisted bullshit coming from a lot of people that are in power, And yet here they are. I mean, you know, let's face it. Bernie Sanders, he's a multimillionaire, at least a millionaire, certainly probably a multimillionaire. He's made money being in Congress,
right,
quite a bit. And it's pretty consistent across the board. I'm sure, you know, as much as we like AOC, she's well on her way to becoming a millionaire.
And honestly, I don't understand. Let me take a minute. I mean, I feel like I'm pretty savvy on civics. I don't understand how you, wow, am I going to come across as naive? I don't understand how you get rich being a member of Congress.
Yep.
Is it because you get invited to be on boards of directors? In Bernie's case, it was a book deal?
Yeah. That's a mystery as well.
I mean, I don't think it's allowed for a member of Congress. Let's say, Clanny Granny. I don't think it would be legal for her to sign a deal with, say, Glock to rep their pistols. Do I have that right?
Yeah, I mean, I keep thinking there's some kind of a secret loophole. Oh God, here we go, deep state, right? There's something because they're amassing wealth through their campaigns, through their PACs. There has to be a way that this shit's getting rerouted back to them. Now, we can't overlook the Stock Act issues. I caught a headline that there were plenty of Congress critters who had violated the Stock Act because they weren't reporting stuff. Now, we have somebody who I hope she wins. As much as I like Adam Schiff, as much as I like, is it Barbara Lee?
I know where you're going. Yeah, you want Katie Porter.
And
so do I.
Because I think Katie is, she's dead to rights when she says she's on a mission to stop Congress members from being able to trade on the stock market while they're in Congress. I believe her. I think she's going to be gangbusters on that. And she's so smart and so, you know, quick on her feet, and just, I mean, they can't, I mean, she just comes back, bam, with the replies and retorts so fast. She's amazing. And, that's a huge problem. And, you know, representatives, like I do miss him quite a bit. Because he was the only gentleman, he was the only congressman in a power wheelchair. There were two manual wheelchair users. One is gone, thank goodness. Tammy Duckworth, who is
yes, Illinois,
in a manual. From, you know, which of course, when you talk about people with disabilities, there's different gradations. I think of it. Of acceptableness, which is a whole other topic. She became a paraplegic because she fought in the military and had basically one of those legs, I think both legs blown off. So that's almost sort of like acceptable, you know, to be a person with a disability because it happened serving this country. Whereas if you're somebody like me who's born with a genetic-based disability, it could be looked at as a bit more. I don't know. I could go into all my theories concerning FDR and.
I get it.
You get it. But
because there's an element of that within my community, and the pecking order is, wow.
There's a pecking order, right? And who knows? I'm probably an overachiever because I. census pecking order. But it's James Langevin, who decided to retire from Rhode Island, a longtime representative, over 20 some odd years, longtime representative. You know, he traded in the stock market too. I mean, he came to Congress as a millionaire because he sued, he sued the municipality because it was he became a paraplegic because of a misfired gun in a locker room when he was trying to become a police officer. And he was in training at the police academy, if I remember this correctly, and was in the locker room and the gun misfired and severed his spine. He was a young, very young person. And so he was able to get a $2-point-something million settlement from the municipality for this terrible accident that, you know, set him in a wheelchair for the rest of his life. And he got support from the community that he wanted to get back, and he's the youngest person ever to become Secretary of State in Rhode Island. He just kept climbing until he made it to the House of Representatives. But he played the stock market too, and you know. And what's interesting is that you have, even though Nancy's husband, Paul Pelosi, is an incredible trader on the trader as in T-R-A-D-E-R in a stock market. Like he, you know, she married well, you know, and he has the best experts and everything else. It's not her per se that was making the stock trades and such. It was him. So usually they'll have, like, in the disclosures, they'll have SP next to it, which is, stands for spouse, as opposed to the representative in the House, him or herself. They don't have to disclose their trades for at least 30 days. So
that's convenient.
Exactly. So you see where I'm going with this? So it's like you want to get a sense of the really good trades, and you want to, you know, what do you do? Well, if you're just a regular schmuck like me, you know, you're going to look at what the wealthy people are doing, right? You're going to say, oh, geez, you know, oh, Pelosi traded this in, or, you know, James Langevin traded that, or you know, and I'm going to hop on that. Well, most of them wait right to the bitter end of the 30 days. Now, some don't, but a lot of them do. And so by the time, even if they wait a couple of weeks, by the time the poor, you know, peons, the hoi polloi, get to really take a look at this, if they even know where to look, it's too late. Too late. It's usually the trade is gone. It's dead. It's you know, whatever money was made has been made already. And this is problematic. I mean, even Nancy, she fucked up. She really did. Now, she used it as an opportunity when she was saying, well, no, she didn't really want to do anything about that when she was called out on it. She did do a course correction of sorts. I mean, she had been questioned as to why so many people in Congress were not filing within the 30-day time frame. And, they didn't get rid of it, but she used it as an opportunity to bring up the fact that the Supreme Court and the members of the Supreme Court and their stock trades are hidden. And she was
basically saying, because of course they are.
Because of course they are. So if you are demanding this of us,
then he should be demanding it of the Supreme Court.
And see, you just opened the door. You just opened the door to our obligatory Star Trek reference of the evening. What does a Supreme Court justice need with a stock portfolio? I mean, no offense. I know they have them, and they're supposed to be in blind trust, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
That's all smoke and mirrors, okay?
Yeah.
Sooner or later, even if you don't have stock in a company, a stock case before the Supreme Court is going to make you think about the shit you have stock in. So let's pay them a shit ton of money for being Supreme Court justices and tell them no portfolio, sell it.
Yeah, completely sell it. Not this bullshit, like, you know, with Trump and his, you know, oh, well, I'm letting go. My family's going to handle it. Come on. Come on, you know. You know, they think we're stupid. And you know what? A lot of people in this country are stupid. It's unnecessary. I just feel like this whole thing is unnecessary. Everybody, you know, they say a rising tide lifts all boats, you know. And to have such extreme wealth like we're seeing, these people are essentially becoming governments of them in and of themselves, are trying to manipulate. People are becoming almost desensitized, or well, they are becoming desensitized. We could look at what Trump did in terms of the Stormy Daniels case as quaint. It's quaint in comparison to what's happening now when you have people like, in terms of voter or election interference. And they, you know, these wealthy individuals are finding other ways to do more damaging election interference, such as Steve Bannon, you know, working on Robert Kennedy Jr. To run.
Right.
Elon Musk.
Bob, let's just take a moment for this, shall we? Bobby Kennedy has jumped the shark.
Mm-hmm.
Who thinks he has any credibility? What kind of bell jar in Ripley's Believe It or Not auditorium does anyone who thinks Bobby Kennedy has any credibility live in?
Exactly.
And by the way, answering my naive question, Jimmy in the Great Northwest said, how you get rich as a congressperson? They get rich because of dark money. As a congressperson, somebody has to pay for their campaign.
All right.
And I guess that's true. And Randy Radar pointed out in Bernie's case, it was also Ben and Jerry's, I think. I don't know. But very few people walk away from there broke.
Right.
And, of course, there's also
exactly.
The best health care that the country has to offer. That you get. And, you know, look, you've got to survive three terms in the House to vest on retirement, if I recall correctly. I think it's similar in the Senate. So all you got to do is get there and stay there, and to a certain extent, kind of got it made.
Well, yeah. I mean, look, Dianne Feinstein. She's got the best health care money can buy. Okay, that poor woman is essentially on her last leg, and there is quite a bit of. There's been quite a bit of speculation to her cognitive abilities.
But if you study a lot of these senators, I mean, Sheldon Whitehouse, as much as I adore Sheldon Whitehouse, he has a bit of a tremor. I don't know if you've noticed that with his head a little bit.
Yeah, I have noticed that.
Senator Blumenthal. Classy, gent, really good guy, incredible champion for women's rights. My senator from Connecticut. He's got a tremor. He's shaky. Hands shaky. Donald Trump. That fucker with what he eats and what he does, he is the obesity, everything else. He keeps going, man. It's like this son of a bee can live. He's basically living off of fast food. The stress level on this guy, you know, Stoke the Charlotte Crane.
All right, STS.
He got COVID. Right? What happened?
No, I mean, this is a guy who cannot walk down a slope, okay?
Correct. And, you know, of course, they want to compare with Biden. Biden tripped. I mean, the guy tripped. He pointed this out. He tripped on something, okay?
Right. He tripped over a thing, not a molecule of thin air. The 100th anniversary, the 100th anniversary of the Battle of the Ardennes. Nitwit Nero would not go outside because his hair might get wet.
You know.
But then again, you think about what would happen to that hairdo if it got wet. Oh, hell, darling.
I perish the thought. Perish, that's all. So, I don't know. I know this is very distorted on my part, but I'm just kind of still, I'm just thinking all of this stuff through because it's having certain people out there hogging all the currency, not putting it back into the economy. It's not a good, you know, it's not going to result in anything good, even for them, ultimately, because you need to have an economy that's working. You need to have things cyclical. You need to, you know, it's the same thing as, you know, giving people tax breaks or giving, like even with the, during COVID, with the whole thing with that Biden had done to since the stimulation, right? Stimulating the economy. Paying people well, you know, that kind of thing. It gets reinfused back into the economy. The regular, you know, hardworking American gets it, you know. Personally, I don't feel we should have to be paying for food, shelter, and all that. It's just me. Those are the basics of life, water, that kind of stuff. But that's the system we're in. So if you give someone stimulus, a hardworking American stimulus, but hardworking families, says Nancy Pelosi. You know, she's uber fucking wealthy, and I part of me is just like,
I know. Let's not hate on Nancy too much. But, I mean, the woman did a fantastic freaking job.
She did. I'm terribly, but again, she's part of that 1%. She's really quite the elite, and again, there is a catch. There is a requirement that you be the hardworking American. And most of the people that say that aren't really that hardworking, in my opinion. They don't work like we work. Like Jeff Bezos, what the fuck is he doing per every hour on the hour to make what he makes? He's not doing anything. So I have an issue with that. But, there is no reason why we can't have, everybody can't have a decent life. And to me, you know, who is that fellow that suggested everybody get a standard 1,000 a month? He ran for the office. I think that's Chintzy. I think it should be at least 2,000. But where we all have a base income coming in. I mean, to a certain degree, even what's her face there, that horrid thing from Alaska, she did that, right? Wasn't she? Didn't every Alaskan get like $2,000?
Oh, that's
or something
well, that,
from
I mean,
oil
that's,
revenue?
Yeah, that's pre-Godzilla from
Palin?
Wasilla. That's just what the Alaska state government set up when the oil from the North Slope was discovered.
Yeah. So it's been done before in one form or another, you know. I feel like the system is making it so that the money is being withheld. It's making it difficult to not only make the money, but to hold on to it. Like, there's so much in this culture out there to separate us from our money. I mean, the daily pressure, I have more subscriptions than I can count. I'm like, I got to work on this and get rid of all these subscriptions. You know, whether it's to a food service or Instacart or whatever, you know, whatever it might be.
Right. Every time I order coffee from Amazon, it's like, would you like to have this delivered on a regular basis? No, I don't.
No. Yeah, and, you know, and then to make it something where you have to, here, you'll get the first month for free, but then it's up to you to make sure that after that first month, you know, that it doesn't go into a full subscription, right? It's incumbent upon you, and they hope that their people will forget, and, you know, suddenly it's being charged to their credit card every month, and blah, blah, blah. So, I think most of us want to just contribute, give back, get in, get the money in, and give the money back out, and have it cyclical, where, you know, you can look at an account, a bank account that you are pleased with. With the banks, that's another whole other issue. And what they do to separate you from your own money. Okay. And I think the local banks are they're beginning to fail for a reason. Because a lot of stuff can be done online, where you don't have to deal with. Like, I've been working on this for months. I've been transferring my money out of local banks into an online thing. I have not had this much access to my money in decades, and I love it. You know, whereas with the local banks, like I had one of my banks, they had a lock on at least $20,000 of my savings. I couldn't do anything with it. Because if I attempted to try to do that, they would start charging me a monthly fee every month. And that's not sustainable, because over time, that monthly fee is going to eat, bite, you know, it's going to chip away. And I felt more impoverished. I did. I felt more impoverished because I couldn't get to this money because the bank was holding on to it. And the interest rate was crap. Absolute crap. So I wasn't, you know, I get what, like, you know, 31 cents or something a month. And they had my money. So this kind of stuff, it's just, everything is the pressures on the regular American, the average American, even Democrats say that the average, I hate that. We're anything but, because I think we're on the ground, we see what is necessary to make this a functioning nation. At least most of them, you know. And billionaires like Elon Musk and Harlan Crow, Jeff Bezos, they're not part of that equation. They're damaging it. Now, Bill Gates, book is billions and more or less, you know, has made it into something like Mackenzie Bezos, you know, trying to give back. And he's been demonized. He's been demonized. Anyway, that's just kind of where my mind is at right now. And my concern with somebody like Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is that I feel like he, because he's a Kennedy, he's going to attract a certain group, or even maybe even people from the, you know, the conspiracy theorists, the MAGAs, those voters. Because he more or less speaks to them. And even potentially, I would think some, you know, people on the left, some liberals, might even find him attractive.
I've actually heard someone, you know, scratching their head and saying, you know, maybe he'd be the guy. Well, you know, maybe monkeys are going to fly out my butt tomorrow morning, but it ain't very likely. But no, he's not going to be the guy. He's a tool. And I'm proud of the fact that I knew he was a tool long before this ever came out. He's been a tool for a very long time.
Well, yeah. Yeah, look, I know people that they have long COVID because they listen to that bullshit. You know?
And honestly, at what point in time, Darlene, do we stop calling it long COVID and start calling it forever COVID?
Yeah.
I mean, is there any evidence out there that long COVID eventually goes away, that there are no symptoms at all anymore?
Not yet.
I mean, what's next? Really long COVID? Really, really long COVID?
Super duper, like super duper long COVID?
Double plus so, secret probation anyway, COVID? Oh, by the way, Scary Jerry says, "Hi, Darlene." Waves. Food porn. I'm gonna chow down on this skillet of noodles and have some oat coffee. I'll call in soon. And reminds you, Scary Jerry's not being gross. Darlene was my first and only horn crush. So.
Aw, thank you. Yeah. Oh, I'm so flattered. Where's my fan? I gotta fan myself and cool down here. Thank you, Scary Jerry.
Get your fan that, you know, that they pass out down to the, you know, down to the festivals and stuff in summer.
And just to get back to Harlan Crow, and then I'll sign off. As I got to give Elsie his IV and order some crap.
Is he okay? Is he okay?
Yeah, he's doing good. He's being a little shit, you know, like usual. He's high maintenance, but he's doing okay. Considering where he was over a year ago at this point, it's good so far. So I'm very happy that, you know, he's managed. He's a tough little guy. You know, I mean, look, he's got it made. He's not going to leave us anytime soon, I hope. Because he's got it made, you know, Harlan Crow, the letter that he wrote to Congress in response to Dick Durbin, it was weird because his attorney wrote it. And again, it was sort of like the attorney's more or less a mouthpiece as opposed to an independent thinking actor on this, but maybe not. But it just seemed to me with responding to Dick Durbin about coming forward and talking to Congress that the way he rebuffed that, it was almost like he was a Supreme Court. Did you notice that?
Yes. He and I do not mean this. I do not mean this in a good way. Magisterial.
You know, yeah.
How, do you? You know, it's the classic. You know, looking at the comment. Do you know who I am? Yeah, yeah, buddy. You're a guy who's about to get a tech ed.
You know, and again, you know, again, he knows that if the Pandora's box is open, like if they can get him and start pulling more into things, it's stuff is going to bust wide open in terms of all of his sleazy avarice. But it was like he was speaking as if he were the Supreme Court or on behalf of the Supreme Court. And it's just like, who the hell do you think you are? Oh, wait, that's right. You're calling for a billionaire who bought a Supreme Court justice.
Right, and never worked a day in his life. And wait, we're back to where we started. Only got all of his wealth through wealth transferred intergenerationally.
Okay, so that's how he did it. I wasn't
His daddy was Trammell Crowe, and Trammell Crowe built a real estate empire. And back in the late the go-go late 80s in Atlanta, I knew a girl who worked for Trammell Crowe.
Wow. You know, and it's reminiscent of Trump, too, because, you know, daddy there, the freaking AKK member. I remember Donald Trump talking. He's such a bullshit, boastful, grifting louse. You know, when he was interviewed, when he was much younger, he made it sound like it was remarkable what he did. You know, he talked about his father, and you know, and he just asked Daddy for $1 million. And what did he do with that money? What was the remarkable, groundbreaking thing he did?
Daddy built. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, you.
No, Daddy built his real estate empire in New Jersey. So the remarkable, groundbreaking, amazing thing that Donnie did. Amazing. Was to bring the real estate empire across the Hudson into New York, into Manhattan. Wow.
Yeah, because that would make him respectable.
Wow. Like, you know, duh.
I know, urethra.
There's nothing remarkable in that. There's nothing remarkable, and he couldn't even do it right.
I was going to say, isn't the rest of the story that he screwed it up?
Yeah. He screwed up. As a matter of fact, you know, this will be interesting thing because Ivana, and again, Mary Trump keeps bringing up Ivana and her burial site there in Bedminster. They need to dig her shit up. They need to dig her up. Mary Trump keeps bringing it. What do they have buried with her? Okay, but Ivana, I remember when, and he did her dirty. There's no question, you know, with Marla Maples and everything else.
And he did Marla dirty with melanoma, and they did melanoma dirty with Stormy Daniels, and.
And then at this point, you get to the point where you're like, oh, I really don't, you know, whatever. They know what they're dealing with, but, and it was a big deal back then. That Ivana got $25 million settlement in the divorce. That was a big deal back then when it happened. What was in the '80s? The interesting thing is that she was a better businesswoman than he was, a businessman, because she ran a number of his casinos. From what I recall, she ran a number of his casinos. In Las Vegas, and they did extremely well. And he even admitted on television during the divorce or after the divorce that she was a very good businesswoman. She was a very good businesswoman. So whatever, you know, wealth he managed to build while he was married to her probably had a lot to do with her. You know? So they worked out their differences, obviously, and they did this tacky pizza commercial or something for Domino's or what have you. I find it interesting. I mean, I don't know if she hadn't. I mean, I don't understand how he was able to get possession of her remains or cremains or whatever they call, you know, she, I think she was, wasn't she cremated or whatever?
I think so, because back when this was all going down, we were like, wait, you buried the ashes?
Well, that's not unusual. I had a family, my aunt and uncle were cremated and they were buried. Their ashes were buried. They had like a linked urn. It was like linked. And because, okay, Catholic, heavy duty Catholic, okay, back in the day, the Catholic Church was very, very good at convincing married Catholic couples to buy their burial plots very early on in the marriage, which my aunt and uncle did. They bought, you know, because, hey, back then in the 50s, you were going to stay married. There was just no question. There was no such thing. Divorce wasn't even a thought. And they did. They bought their burial plots. So they have these burial plots already. And, you know, my cousin was in, you know, was sort of in a situation where, you know, he had read up on what happens to the body if you bury it, you know, and how it decomposes, and then, you know, what happens with cremation. And he's just like, any day I take cremation over decaying in the ground. So his father, you know, my uncle, mentioned at one point, was, I think I'd rather have us cremated. And that was enough. So it was sort of doing both. What I find interesting is how did he get possession of her remains? I would think a wealthy woman such as Ivana Trump would have had something there in writing. Ahead of time, where it would be something that the family couldn't necessarily. The whole thing just seems suspicious to me.
We're off in the wilds of wild speculation, but I think I can maybe see a way through that explains at least some of this. So she wasn't just Nitwit Nero's ex-wife. She was Iwanka and Trader Tot and Eric the Dumber's mama.
You're right. Right.
So the provisions for her disposition are probably relative to them. And we all know that that Nitwit Nero exercises a considerable amount of influence over them.
Listen. I got the perfect idea. We'll bury her at Bed Monster. You know, I loved your mama. We were married for a long time. I loved her very much, except when I was pulling her hair out or slapping her around. So, you know, y'all don't need to worry about it. It's a time for grieving. Let me.
But can't you set up what you want in a will in that regard?
No, a will. A will is useless for. You can't say this with regard to all jurisdictions. But a will is functionally useless relative to the disposition of one's earthly remains. Because so wills have to be probated.
But you can still go to
a
funeral home of your choice.
You can execute a power of attorney.
And tell them what you want. There has to be a way.
There can be
where
some kind of. There was. And I don't know what New Jersey law is like. Maybe it was in the will, but there were some means by which she gave someone the power to dispose of her remains, or she in advance. Go ahead.
Or he just stepped in and said, "Hey, I'm the former president," and I say, "What goes?" Because what that brings me back to, okay, is John F. Kennedy Jr. Oh, shit, conspiracy, John F. Kennedy Jr. Not really. Okay, John F. Kennedy Jr. died in a plane crash, right? With his wife and his wife's sister. What happened in the aftermath of that? A very powerful senator stepped in and took complete control of the disposition of their remains. Against his wife's family's wishes. What was her name? She was very elegant. It's on the tip of my tongue. John Kennedy Jr.'s wife. I think there's a B in there somewhere. What the hell was her name? She had two other sisters and a mother. And her mother had remarried.
Carolyn Bessette.
They had no say. Carolyn Bessette and her sister, was it Heidi or Heather? She had a sister. The sister was also on the plane and died. The two surviving sisters and a mother had no say in how their daughter's remains were handled. And the sisters lamented, the surviving sisters lamented that they had no place to go to grieve their dead sister. They had no place to go. They had no grave, nothing. Because what did Ted Kennedy do? He completely, like, swooped in and took over disposition of their bodies, had them cremated, and had all of the remains tossed up to sea. And he was just a senator, a very powerful senator, and a Kennedy. So, you know, I don't know. I haven't paid much attention to the whole Ivana death thing. I'm not sure I'm kind of skeptical of the whole thing, you know, she was killed or what. I don't know if I'm necessarily buying all of that.
No, but I'll take a step here. Somebody needs to sneak onto the ground. Somebody needs to sneak onto the grounds, dark and still of the night, with ground penetrating radar.
like LIDAR.
No, LIDAR involves aircraft. Maybe the aircraft would be maybe that would be a better alternative.
Well, LIDAR, also, you can get LIDAR on the latest iPads and iPhones now. It's there. Now, I don't know how deep it goes, but, you know, and that brings up Jack Smith, because I remember saying to you long time ago, I said, you know, they probably should ought to be checking out Bedminster. You know, because of all the secret documents. I mean, that guy is sick. I mean, you look at box after box after box. It raises so many questions. Like, who the hell did? How did all those secret documents and all those boxes get from the White House to him? What the hell transpired within the West Wing and the White House for that to have occurred? And then just the weirdness of that whole situation. When you read Jack Smith's the speaking indictment, but there's a possibility, you know, there's reason to investigate that, sir, for sure. I'm thinking because Jack Smith's so hypersensitive to venue, you know, I'm wondering if something's going to happen in New Jersey. In the federal court in New Jersey, where crimes clearly took place, or, you know, there's evidence that you know, he was sharing top secret information with people there at Bedminster. There may be another series of indictments coming down.
I think there are.
The fact that
Miss Lindsay is out there trying to preemptively intimidate Jack Smith, because, you know, nobody intimidates like Lady G, into not having allowing anything to come out of the D.C. grand jury, tells me that somebody on the inside says, yeah, oh, the shit avalanche hasn't even started yet.
Hasn't even started. But you know what? Again, you know, these senators are powerful. Like, you know, it's what I described concerning Carolyn Bessette's remains. And what happened there? And that's just a senator, quote unquote, just a senator compared to a president or a former president. And he is a former president. So, you know,
whether we like it or not,
two presidents at one time. You know, and we like that he's former. I don't even like that he was president, but, you know, I digress.
Now do Ronald Reagan.
I don't know. Again, can they assume a body on private property? There's a whole host of issues. I think clearly Jack Smith and his crew there, we'll get to the bottom of all of that. I have every confidence in them. I don't have any confidence in Eileen Cannon, but that's another story. But anyway, I just wanted to weigh in, blab a little bit about how the game board is rigged and how it doesn't need to be this way. And the fact that it is just shows how sick and twisted people are, extremely wealthy individuals, and that something happens to them when they get so much money and they can buy 9 yachts and you know, think they can insist that bridges be raised, you know, so they can get their yacht through them, and that they can buy Nazi memorabilia along with Supreme Court justices, and that they can, you know, promote and hate speech. And I just, it's disgusting. It is, and again, there's enablers within Congress. There just is. And here we are sitting here, really, we are the individuals that make this country run with, you know, because if everybody were multimillionaires and billionaires, we'd be bored as fuck, and nothing would work and nothing would run. I mean, we wouldn't be able to function as a nation. So I don't know. I think the course we're on is just not sustainable. That's what I have to say. So, you know, crypto, that's bullshit. Ending the Federal Reserve, that's crazy too. There's certain stability built into the system as well. And there are people that are looking to destroy all of that. We saw that with the debt ceiling, you know, debacle. And thank goodness we have somebody like Joe Biden who is uber experienced. I mean, there's only one other person I would say that was even more prepared, that, you know, or just as slightly less prepared, was Hillary Clinton. She was, you couldn't get more prepared. And then we saw Joe Biden, who clearly knows how to negotiate. I mean, he completely.
Yeah, Nancy Mace said he couldn't find his pants, and then he took their shirt.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, oh, you can't do both. You know, all of a sudden he's like, you know, his cognitive abilities are being questioned, but now he's, you know, he's clearly Dark Brandon, you know?
Pick one, can't have both.
Anyway, all right, well, I'll let you go, my friend, and I'm going to start the IV on the house and listen to the rest of the program, and yeah, so there you go. Oh, and I am driving Wanda. Wanda's
Yay.
Problems have, I think, been resolved. I actually hired the one sole driving instructor that I actually learned something from. And we've been driving 2 to 3 hours a week. She's helping me get back on track.
Wonderful. You need that mobility so badly.
Oh, so badly, yes. And I'm trying to get to a point. It's very expensive. Very expensive. But I like the fact that she's working for me now. And now I get to call the shots, and she can be upfront with me about what she thinks and how she thinks I'm doing. And we're trying to get me to a point where it's just totally second nature for me to get
right
into that van and just freaking go.
That's where you got to get to. Well, wish me
exactly
luck. Wish me luck tomorrow.
I will wish you luck for
haircut. I'm getting the split ends cut off. I'm getting the split ends cut off.
Very good.
I'm very
excellent
nervous. This hasn't been cut. This hasn't been meaningfully cut. I had one other cut. It was just a little trim up, but that was like 2 years. This hasn't been meaningfully cut. The length has not been cut since October 5th, 2019.
Well, it's going to feel great, especially if they give you that nice, you know, shampoo and massage on your scalp.
Oh yes. Wait, I forgot great about that.
Oh, it's like, oh, it feels so good. And, so have fun. Enjoy. Enjoy. I mean, if you can get your, you know, I don't know if you need it or not, but if you can get your nails done, too, and your eyebrows. I usually go to a place where that they do it all, like the eyebrows, the nails.
The oh, kind of like the salon. Kind of like the salon in the Emerald City.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, they do Dorothy's hair, then they do her nails, and she gets the pedi, and they're singing, and yeah.
didn't they do something where they made her pupils green? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I think they did something like that.
Yeah, yeah. Sadly, I get my nails done, I have to go, and you know, it's obligatory that you sit for 2.5 hours, and then you sit for another hour. Yeah. It's summer. It's sandal season. I need a pedi.
Well, you know, if you want to get your fix, you know, sort of like vicariously, you should watch that Christy Meekin. She's amazing, the Christy Meekin nail artist. And her shit is way over the top. And it's incredible to watch her do her art, her do her craft, and just how the nail art performs as she's making stuff. It's just incredible. You can find her on YouTube. You can find her on Facebook. She's hilarious. She's, I don't know if it's a Cockney accent. She's over in Britain. And it's so much fun. Even though this is not anything I would ever care to think about or do, I just enjoy watching her apply her craft because it's a lot of fun. And you know,
those nail artists use brushes that have like one hair.
Oh God, yeah, and just there's a whole science behind it, and I'm just blown away. She has her own line, and you know the gel and the blah, blah. There's all different you know kinds of polish and it is for nail. Nail technicians and nail artists and that kind of thing, but it's still fun to watch as a novice and just having fun with the designs and just seeing how they come into and just the amount of work involved. And it even helps me with taking better care of my nails because while I watch, I'm like, I'm watching, I might as well work my nails, you know? And, It's fun. So if you ever are just looking to have some fun, watch her because she's
and what's
hilarious.
What's her name again?
Upbeat. Her name is Christy Meekin. Meekin, M-E-A-K-I-N.
Okay.
I think it's Christy. Kirstie? Yeah, Christy.
I'll look her up.
Meekin, nail artist. And, she's hilarious. You know, she can understand what the hell she's saying with that accent sometimes. But it's just funny. And she has
that's okay. She probably says the same thing about us.
Yeah. You know, the worst client ever is her friend Faye. And it's just funny. And that guy is there, Adam. He's hilarious. He's the one that takes he does the camera stuff, the camera work. And he's like, ooh, I like that. Ooh, that's a, you know what I mean? It's really very charming, and she'll do lives when she's promoting a line. of new nail, because she has her own line, and it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun to just watch it, just the meticulousness and the work and the, you know, and splaying versus clotting it on. And, oh, I mean, there really is the science behind it. And I didn't realize the degree to which it is. So, yeah, have fun with it.
Oh, well, all right. Darlene, go give Opie his IV.
I will. I'll go give Opie his IV, and I'll talk to you soon. Thanks for listening. Thanks, foreign listeners. Bye.
Bye. See you, Darlene. Oh, Darlene always brings her A game. What are you talking about, Randy Radar? Crab cakes and a petty? Well, the petty has more to do with me being diabetic, than I got to take care of my feet. And a petty is a lot cheaper than a podiatrist. Crab cakes? What? I am cooking this weekend for a benefit, and the proceeds are going to go to a project of the ACLU of West Virginia, the program for queer Appalachian youth. Looking forward to that. Of course, it's supposed to rain all week, right when I need to be smoking pork shoulders and briskets and, yeah, making crab cakes. I wish it was as luxurious as it sounds. It's not. And by the way, thank you to Jessica jumping in. We are down to 1240. I talked into a microphone once at AM 1240. But never mind that. I can't let this Moran Monday go by without dealing with this. Posted it over on my Facebook page. Because this is the most Moran Monday of Moran Monday things, I think, ever. And it's right, you know, it's right along the lines with everything we know about toxic right-wingers. You know, we've talked a lot in the last year or two about little Benny, my dry wife, Shapiro. I think we may have sorted out the problem. Turns out that Benny is not nearly as savvy as he thinks he is. God, I love this. This is delicious. I haven't enjoyed anything quite so much since Larry Craig got busted in the Minneapolis, Minnesota downstairs men's room, toe-tapping, trying to get a little something-something from another guy. You know, Larry Craig being, of course, a big Christian from Idaho, of course. I had a doctor's appointment this morning, so Annette went with me, and we were sitting outside the little Rippy Mart, and this church bus van alarm went off. Beep, 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 beep. Just annoying as hell. And eventually a guy wearing a T-shirt that said, "He is risen." It was the something-something Assembly of God, and they had three or four of those vans. Lord knows where they'd been. But he finally, after like 10 minutes, comes out and crawls into the van and turns off the alarm. I looked at Annette and said, "He may be risen, but he ain't risen enough to turn off a car alarm." Still got to have a human being to do that. Never mind. So, Benny, my dry wife Shapiro, is not savvy enough to realize that when you go to a porn video website, they actually see your ISP address. And he didn't just go there, he made a purchase. Now, pardon the spicy language here. Person wrote, "Ben Shapiro jerked off to my transsexual porn, and I'll leak the receipts if you want. Does he not realize you can see who purchases the video? Like, LMAO, dumbass." And it's been less than a day, and he's already trying to get out in front of the allegations. Get wrecked, Ben. I thought he would have tried to hide it instead of addressing it. Yeah, what a turn of events. Somebody said, is this real life? Unfortunately, LOL. So just as we predicted, one of the biggest bigots in America, who holds himself out as a paragon of masculinity and heterosexuality. So I'm going to kind of break it to him, you know. You know, with a trans girl. Still heterosexual, okay? I mean, he's still heterosexual. Can't imagine. But no, he's out there pounding the pudnik to trans porn. And he's trying desperately to explain it away. I wonder what his poor dry wife thinks about it. I don't know. Maybe she's just grateful. She's getting a little, well, it's like the old Jerry Clower joke. Knock us out. Knock him out, John. If I shoot up there, I'm liable to hit you. Don't matter. One of us has got to get some relief. Maybe poor Mrs. Drywife Shapiro is getting some relief. But God, didn't you see that coming from a mile away? That fast-talking little creep with a voice that makes Mickey Mouse sound like James Earl Jones. And he's out there enjoying what ever so many right-wing conservative transphobic men enjoy, watching pornography produced by trans women. And of course, the trans women who produce the pornography often do so out of necessity, because it's very difficult to get a damn job, you know, a job that doesn't involve being naked. But there he was. And, oh, then again, Jordan Peterson's out there doing pictures of him done up in drag makeup. He's got a long way to go. He's done that more than once. All these right-wing masculinity dudes are coming apart at the seams. Or it seems. The Schadenfreude is both broad and deep and delightful. Ben, honey, you're going to come to bed?
Be there in a minute, honey. Be there in a minute, honey. I'm studying up on the war on women in the country. These transgenders, they're good. Benny, you okay, sugar? I'm all better now.
Next up, Matt Dysphoria Beard Walsh. Jordan, you know, for years, you know, Jordan Peterson's been talking about the fact that he has dreams about having sex with his grandmother, so. Oedipus? It's just too beautiful not to mention. Let's see, I hate to keep people waiting when they take time to call into the program. I want to get to the story about the fact that the FBI drug its heels at senior most levels for over a year regarding the decision to open an investigation into the highest levels of the origins of the terrorist attack of January the 6th. The Washington Post had the story. Carol Lenig and Aaron Davis. They write, hours after he was sworn in as Attorney General, Merrick Garland and his deputies gathered in a wood-paneled conference room in the Justice Department for a private briefing on the investigation he had promised to make his highest policy priority, bringing to justice those responsible for the attack on the U.S. Capitol on January 6, 2021. In the 2 months since the siege, federal agents had conducted 709 searches, charged 278 terrorists, and identified 885 likely suspects, said Michael R. Sherwin, then acting U.S. Attorney for the District of Columbia, ticking through a slide presentation. Garland and some of his deputies nodded approvingly at the stats, and the new Attorney General called the progress remarkable, according to people in the room. Here's the problem. In the presentation of to Merrick Garland on March the 11th, 2021, there was not a single reference to Julius Geezer, or any of his inner circle of cronies, Lick Spittles, and Renfields. And based on the investigation by the Washington Post, it was more than a year before prosecutors and FBI agents finally started looking into the highest levels of the attempt by the White House, the Trump White House, to overturn the results of a lawful and a lawful election that was a crushing victory for Biden. And so they slow walked. And there's something about this that has a flavor of, for want of a nail, a shoe was lost. The Washington Post, trying to be so careful, says whether a decision about Trump's culpability for January 6th could have come any earlier is unclear. The delays in examining that question began before Garland was even confirmed. Sherwin, a senior Justice Department official, and Paul Abbott, the top deputy to FBI Director Christopher Wray, quashed a plan by prosecutors in the U.S. Attorney's Office to directly investigate Trump associates for any links to the riot, terrorist attack, deeming it premature. And so Merrick Garland embraced that decision and that strategy. And even as the evidence drip, 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 dripped out, nothing. One former justice official briefed on prosecutors' discussion said you couldn't even use the T word because the attorney general was absolutely determined to avoid any claims of political motive, and it chilled any efforts to investigate Nitwit Nero's sedition, conspiracy. This is damning. And the fact that they did not go that far, did not investigate for so long, gave oxygen to the maggots for claiming that they were only tourists. It's a long read. It is worth your time. Washington Post. The headline reads, FBI resisted opening probe into Trump's role in January 6th for more than a year. Another one of those cases of insurrections, unsuccessful insurrections that are not sufficiently punished become dress rehearsals for the one that succeeds. It's kind of heartbreaking. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Ish. Robin, is that you?
That's me. Is that you, Scary Jerry?
This is me, because I heard Darlene needs... Darlene needs a Cockney accent, and it kind of raises the scale a little bit, so I try to call in and say, hey, how you all doing? How you doing, Robin?
I'm good. We've gotten almost all the way through a program without the internet collapsing. I'm calling it a win.
I think you need a redundancy, but that's another conversation for another day. Let me get out of the rain so you can hear me, because it's probably screwing up my my clarity. I went to my first Rainbow Posse parade ever. And I got to tell you, I was missing out. In fact, well, you know, it's my evangelicism that got in the way, right? Because, you know, abominations and all of that. And I was a little nervous rolling up to it. I worked the event. I got to chase my money down for the event tomorrow, but that's another story for another day. Conservatives, Republicans, advertising, Craigslist, blah, 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 blah. Here's the point. I hit on a trans girl, and she said, hey. I hit on a lot of bi girls, and they said, hey, too. And I finally figured out what the fan thing was. You know, there's like older guys fanning themselves. Like, oh, hot. Why, thank you, sir. Not into that, but thank you for the compliment. And super ally this weekend. and so many observations. But before the parade, before the Pride Parade, there was a historic thunderstorm, 60-mile-an-hour winds, hail. I'm like, God, that was, and I'm thinking, you know, is God trying to tell me something here? What's going on? As I rounded the corner, coming up to the parade, there were two rainbows in the sky. And as soon as the parade started, it cleared up. It was amazing. And the thing that let me know that I was home, because I've always hung out with you people, was the music. I heard boom, 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 boom. I thought, oh, these are my people. Oh, that's 4/4
beat.
Here we go.
Yeah. Wait a minute. Is that 138 beats per minute?
Yeah. I was like, oh, I'm home. And it was tremendous. I had one nice, my only complaint was the usually male gay, shall we say, gatekeeper who protects their gay women friends. And I actually yelled at him, hey, you're cock blocking over here. And he looked, and he turned totally red because I used the right term at the right stage. But other than that, it was great. I had a Siri in another life. Started in 2000. Oh shit! It started in 2014. Oh shit! Almost a decade ago. That I had a partner at the time, business partner. I said we need to start, you know, working more gay events and gay clubs because the clubs we're working at now are violent and there's not as much money and it's always a flea market. You know, if somebody spends $20 over here, if I go over there, they're going to spend $200. And I may get a croissant out of the deal. Anyway, we had a falling out over that, and amongst other things. But I was right. I was like, oh, yeah, these are my people. So I went as an ally, my favorite Dollar General cashier, who is Hispanic. So she wears her Rainbow Tribe bracelet, but she kind of keeps it to herself because she's, you know, she's coming out the closet door. And I hit on her before, and she made like a weird face. I'm like, oh, rainbow. Okay, I get it. I gave her my rainbow glasses that I got here, and she died laughing because we finally connected. You understand what I'm saying? And it was wonderful. And I love being a fucking ally. And that's it. Because I am my brother's keeper, even if he's wearing a tutu. And that's my, I was thinking, holy shit. I've never met more nicer people than gay people. They're the ones that if you get hit by a car, they're going to stop and check on you. As everybody goes rolling by. And I had so many realizations and there was even a church, that is, rainbow oriented that I think I'm going to go check them out. Cause those are my people. And, I just like women from that side of the rainbow anyway. Got an open mind, as they were, and cultural. I heard so, you know what? I was telling another guy, I was like, you know what? I've heard so many lines today that I'm going to have to say because gay men have the best lines ever. They got game. I was like, wow, that was a good line. And there was a nice... lesbian couple, and they had the most epic kiss I've ever seen. And I said, okay, that's the best kiss I've seen all weekend. In fact, if I had a certificate to give, and they died laughing. It was so good, because I was like, this goes back when I was 11 years old. I kissed a girl. And then she ran and told everybody I couldn't kiss. And I was still mortified. And I was watching these women, not from an appearance standpoint, kind of like a TED talk. I was like, oh, okay, I see. Oh, all right. So that's how you kiss a girl. Well, thank you for the TED talk. There it is. I was like, I have been doing it wrong. Okay. All right. Thank you. So it was, that's what I got. Did you get any of that?
Got it all.
Robin?
Yeah, right here.
That's your, and I made a joke to the gay officers and the gay firemen and the gay security guards, because you can tell who's who by whose leg is bumping. That's the way I put it. I said,
yeah, careful about that.
This is not the state. Mostly, I'm within 90%, because they're the ones who linger after their shift. All right? Do I got to make this clearer than that? All right. Somebody said, well, this is the state of Florida, and it was because the Fort Lauderdale Police Department had rainbow flags, too, and the fire department did. They were very... I said something to everybody now. I said, this is not the state of Florida. This is the state of South Florida, okay? And there's three states in Florida. Y'all can keep the rest. And everybody died last night, as I've been saying. That Trump's going to prison.
God, from your mouth to God's ear.
Trump is going to prison. And I might have to buy a gun because of that. And I've been doing my best to destroy Ron DeSantis. I'm about to write a rainbow theme, fuck Ron DeSantis article on Daily Cause. I'll direct y'all to it when it's finished. I wish I would have taken more pictures, but I was working. And I was working for racist, abusive Republicans, so they didn't want you to take pictures and shit like that. I'm like, really? I've literally never had that fucking direction. But all right, I'm not pissing y'all off. And that's it. How you doing?
You know, it was a lovely weekend. Bride and then Father's Day. And I'm excited about next weekend. I haven't cooked on a large scale in a while, so I'm stoked. Last week and the week before were just hell. Yeah, no weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth, but just being run all over creation. And last week, having to rent a car, get one toe, get another toe. It was trying. But it all worked out nicely over the weekend, because the weekend was breathtakingly beautiful. You know, beautiful summer's day here in Appalachia is like nothing. And yesterday, when it finally got up to like 86, 89 degrees, like, it's finally here. Because when you deal with winter's cold, the heat of summer is a kiss.
Do you know who I saw in the Keys getting sunburned and just loving the heat? Former resident of the British Isle, myself included. I know exactly what you speak about cold. I still have the memory in my bones. And I'll leave it at that. But it's funny the way that works. There was somebody who said online, and I stole your joke about rancid rancid hot dog water. I changed it to rancid sausage water, which I thought had more punch to it and was more comedically funny. I have a new Reddit account. You'll be able to, if you're looking for me, you'll be able to find it by that joke. Just giving you credit there on the air. But, Ron DeSantis
is going to mop the floor with Biden.
Because I've been telling people, he did butt stuff in Guantanamo. Nobody knows that, okay? And it was his idea. Nobody knows that either. And I shut up a lot of right-wingers at that point. I'm the guy online who's waiting for somebody to use the N-word. You feel me?
Oh, yes.
I'm just saying, that's my come off the top rope moment. And they hate. But we have three hurricanes or tropical systems. In fact, one of them, if I'm using my my mind's eye, that first one is definitely a hurricane. They don't have any sensors on it yet. They say 35 miles an hour. I'm like, nah, that much rotation looks like 60 miles an hour, which is right on the line. Or 60 knots would be a hurricane, actually. We have three of them pointed in our general direction. Everything is kind of flowing this way. And this is the first year I'm going, all right, come on, death and destruction. Ron DeSantis is terrible in a disaster. So while he's in Iowa, it's time, you know, even though it's June, and there's never been three systems in June. Oh, yeah, there was in 2005, which was the year Katrina, Rita, and Wilma. So we're up. It seems like it's definitely Florida's turn. And other than trying to get some cash in my pocket and maybe getting another cell phone on another network and just visiting all the people I love, making sure they're okay. Other than that, all I can do is buy a ticket on a bus beforehand. and get out of here when the shit goes and go visit my my 90-year-old aunties in New York. That's pretty much my hurricane plan. Because in the red states, you're on your fucking own, and that's it. I do have California dreams lately, though. I really do.
I get that. I get that. I've got road fever so bad I can't stand it, and it's got to happen. It's just got to happen. I'm getting closer and closer to just giving in and deciding that I'm going to do my harebrained cockamamie scheme and take the show on the road.
Well, if you had redundancy, that's the thing I'm going to leave on.
We're back to the redundancy. Go.
Yeah. I'm going to clear my spirit. And either Wednesday or Thursday, I'm going to contact the Starlink Corporation and become a vendor. Because I have a saying to myself, every now and then, God sends you a fax. And you're still going down because what happened was, I don't know when you pay your T-Mobile bill, but I'm sure you're pretty close to paying it. When that happens, they have an automatic throttle circuit that kicks in. They throttled you. You're using too much data. They don't tell you that.
I went over that with them in extreme detail. This program does not go out via T-Mobile.
Okay.
And I'm not throttled in any way, shape, form, or fashion.
So how did you just drop out? The other answer is terrifying, okay? And you may not want that answer.
I didn't just drop out.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
I haven't had any buffering or anything. I mean, the internet is a very weird place.
Not today, Friday.
Oh, Friday? Yeah. Chantel crashed.
Oh, Chantel is your transmit portion?
Yeah, Chantel is my home internet.
Okay.
Because
T-Mobile is just for the...
T-Mobile
is just for the line. Okay.
Yeah.
Their
home internet is not quite up to snuff yet, and they were very upfront about that and said, "Nope, you know, we'll tell you when it's available."
Are they less than or more than $100 a month?
Their home internet.
Yeah,
less than, in a big way.
All right. What's your up speed?
On T-Mobile?
No, on your Chantel.
My Chantel up is about 20. My down is 300.
All right, so you need redundancy. The Starlink circuit's the best internet in the world right now, and I'm going to go sell it to Rich.
Yeah, but hold on, Jerry. Isn't that Leon scum?
No, that's Elon Muskrat.
Yeah, Leon scum.
I hate him, but.
Yeah, I will not give him one red cent.
I know how you feel, but you get a dedicated lane.
Don't care. Meaning
I understand if you're so well. It's time for me to make a couple of bucks, as it were.
That's cool. But I will not have anything to do with financing his fucking beach house on Mars. Fuck him. With a dried out fucking saguaro cactus.
Okay? With an umbrella. With a beach umbrella, yes. Fuck him with a beach umbrella. I get it. That's open. I get it. I'm right there with you. I'm glad the Kia EV exists so I don't have to get a fucking Tesla because, you know. But he's the only one, and there's not many providers for bandwidth in this country, regardless of how much billions of dollars we gave them before the whole bandwidth situation happened. They're still fucking us on it. And I got to make some money. I used to be in this business a long time ago, and I made some money, and it turns out Comcast still sucks. So the people I talked to about that were very receptive. I'm like, fuck, I got to do this. I mean, that's what I'm supposed to be doing for now. The other thing I got to bring up, and this involves you, I got to come out with some matches or pens or some kind of business card for your show because I start talking about it, and people are very interested in it because of the circles I travel in. So I have to professionally promote your show better. And that's it.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
I have to. It's just, I have to. And the last thing, what's the address again? H-E-A, you know, that's how our conversations end.
Yeah.
You know, nobody has a pen and paper anymore. People are usually inebriated or walking away or otherwise what they call it. So it's something they really want to do, but they forget about it.
Right.
If I had a card,
they want to do it. They want to do it while they're loaded. And then they forget about it when they sober up.
Yeah, because the nature of festivals. But I learned a lot about it. I was like, damn it, I could never work in an office. I love festivals. I really get into festivals. It's in my DNA. I don't know what it is. I like the grimy beginning where everybody's groaning and sweating, putting up everything. I like I love when they go, okay, we're on, and people start rushing in. I love the sound, the music, the smells, the screams, the yelling, the smoke. And I love when everybody leaves and they break it down. And this part of my life right here that I have, with the kids gone and the wife gone and the dog gone, where I'm going, what I'm doing now, I think it's festivals. The also, one more thing I want to add in. And here's where we get scary. All right. You people are scared. Run away now because you're getting scary. You forgot the most important news development of the weekend. I'm not even going to let you struggle with it because you'll never get it. The neo-Nazi who ate methylene, dioxy, methyl, amphetamine, and was like, what the fuck am I doing with these, my life? Fuck these newses. I'm out. Did you read that?
No.
Yeah, they gave a Nazi ecstasy, and it changed his life when he left the group. And everybody's going, we wonder why that happens. How did that happen? What the fuck's going on? Because if you sit in the bosom of angels, it changes things. And that's my other mission. How you break extremism, distraction, apathy, nay, how you fix the planet is that the way the rich have kept us under their boot is by the subject. You know, fucking Aaron Rodgers can fucking trip for 3 days and we're all going, hey, great. Don't let a black man get caught with some tabs in his pocket, though. He's going to have a different experience. You hear what I'm saying, Rob?
I get that. I do.
That's, the hippies were right. They really shut down the hippies when they started passing out acid. Most people don't know, and this is no context whatsoever. Do you know that all the acid in the world for the last 30 years was made by one person? Majority of it. We're talking 99%. William Pickard. He was rearrested in 2012, and he just got out in 2020. He's 90 years old.
Jesus.
They caught him coming across Kansas with a lab, and I was like, you're a fucking idiot. I wouldn't go across Kansas with a fucking seed. Or vape or any of those parts. Just don't. And that's how they caught him. I think somebody snitched on him because that's just too random and specific at the same time. But the point is, the real pioneers, the people who grind it out, your Chauvins, your Terrence McKenna's, your Pickards, I'd wear those guys on a t-shirt because they changed the world. I'm going to make it unspecific and change some of the names, but back in the day, she was pink and her name was Molly, and I had a former Proud Boy or Proud Boy acolyte type walk up to me, look me in the face. He went, Jerry, I never saw him in my life. I just gave $20 to a homeless person. Thanks, man. I got to get back on the plane. And I'm out. God bless you all. Take care of yourself.
All right. See you, Jerry. Bye now.
Bye.
And so I guess we made up for a little bit of the time we lost on Friday. Because that's just how it rolls here. We got through a whole program. Yay. And fingers crossed we'll do it tomorrow and Wednesday and Thursday and Friday. Tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow. We'll be at 1550 tomorrow, and hopefully we'll knock some of that out. By the way, thank you, because I did not do this at the beginning of the program because I was doggone excited to just be getting started on a program. Thank you to our 19th, 18th, and 17th day of the month subscribers. Thank you to Darlene, and thank you to Clayton. Everyone who's a subscriber is a genuine help and a big part of why this program stays on the air. Thank you to our friend at Postal Weight Education Services. I know who you are. Thank you. Happy Father's Day, he said. Thank you, Grace and Charlene in Rogues Island. Thank you to Joy in Ann Arbor. Thank you to Labor Man in New Mexico. Thank you all, Patreon and PayPal subscribers, for being partial sponsors of the program. Thanks to our a la carte contributors. That's Ralphs and Jessica today and Joey's Challenge. Thanks to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in this program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Roger in the chat room. Thank you to Brother Deacon Asa. Head on .live. Remember, like, subscribe, follow, however they describe it. Leave a comment on the podcast, please. It helps. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thanks, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia, and a proud union shop. I want to share something with you from Jessica. On the shuttle back to the park and ride to my Jeep, this is up in the greater Rochester, Minnesota metropolitan co-prosperity sphere, I just got off work and was streaming the program until my earbuds died. I'll pick up the stream for my commute home. But I thought I'd give you a little bit of happiness to match mine, Robin. I couldn't help but smile at the post you shared on Facebook regarding Ben Shapiro. So delicious. And especially the happiness that arrived on our porch in a big brown cardboard box, inside of which was a brand new pair of black Rydell R3 roller skates. Old school quad skates with the wheels in the corners instead of in line. I can't balance on blades. And low cut, not high tops. Best of all, Rydell is a Minnesota company, and since I ordered directly from the company, I kept my purchase local. I live about 100 miles from Red Wing, also home of Red Wing Shoes, and supported the Minnesota economy in the process. Wished I could have learned to skate as a kid, and haven't strapped on a pair since high school, but watching the 2009 movie Whip It, starring Elliot Page, rekindled my want to learn. Not to mention I have friends who indulge in a certain roller skate-centric sport, and as friends are wont to do, are using their siren songs to convince me to play. I've been a fan since 1989 and roller games on TV, so this isn't a sudden impulse or obsession. But if I get proficient enough with my skating, there will be a certain Scandinavian Valkyrie on the flat track playing for the home team of the Greater Rochester Metropolitan Co-Prosperity Sphere, the Med City Roller Derby. We'll see how that goes. So as I revel in the Shapiro shitstorm and as Jessica dreams of Derby, let me spread some happiness with $3 in honor of my R3s and another $7 for Shapiro. I know $10 won't put a large dent in the deficit, but a girl needs Derby gear. I hope you and the family congregation are having a wonderful evening, Robin. I'll keep y'all updated on my misadventures in skating. Do that, please, Jessica. And honestly, I kind of wish they were high tops. Girl needs ankle support. Sounds so fun. I wish I was not so horribly uncoordinated. I know better than to get on skates. Please stay safe, everybody. Get your booster if they're available to you. The pandemic, I guess, is over, but the virus isn't. And as I said with Darlene, what do we call? Okay, we were called long COVID, really long COVID, really, really long COVID, forever COVID, double plus secret probation COVID. It's all out there still. So you need to wear your mask, especially if you're going to be around the viral bunch of particles spewing, idiocy spewing, fascism spewing maggots. You need to wash your hands. You need to not touch your face. You need your hand sanitizer. need to maintain your social distance as best as you possibly can. And above all, if Paul Gosar comes down the sidewalk towards you, babbling something about deputizing every American citizen to find the secret Antifa's dressed up as MAGA who started January 6th, well, avoid him like the plague. Because he is. And always, always, always. Gina, it's all for you. Later.